In This Corner with Brian Campbell begins this week with a tribute to the late, great Leon White, a.k.a. Big Van Vader, who died Monday at the age of 63. We are talking about not only one of the most iconic heel big men of the modern pro wrestling era, somebody who worked on top in WCW, WWE, and NJPW, but a man who was certainly, let's say, ahead of his time when it comes to being that agile for a big man, for a monster heel. Adam Silverstein, you asked me this question somewhat rhetorically this morning when we heard of his death, but how is this man not already in the WWE Hall of Fame?
It's insanity. I mean, the fact that he inducted Stan Hansen, right? Not too many years ago.
2016.
And hasn't been inducted since or before. It's mind-boggling. Think of what this guy's accomplished. Three-time WCW champion, big man heel. That doesn't normally happen. Not a guy like him, not a character like him who wears a mask, right? Three-time IWGP heavyweight champion. Caused a riot in what arena was that?
That was in the Sumo Hall in Tokyo. He got NJPW banned there because he beat Inoki at the time when Inoki was unbeaten for many years. That was a heck of a debut. And by the way, he was just like 3 years into the business, coming right out of the NFL at that point.
Totally unique gimmick. The fact that he had everything. He had the mask, the look, the hand signal, the body type of a. Not the wrestler that Vince McMahon loves, the big muscle bound, 6'5" dude, but the guy that fans connect with, the Bam Bam Bigelow type style, the Leon White type style, like that's, Rusev and that's what he is. And he was really the first one, like you said, to become popular maybe in the face of not having the typical body type.
Yeah, definitely. I think he had the iconic look with the mask. Anybody that saw him in Japan with that in early WCW with that crazy black headdress that he would bring out with the smoke and the lights, that's iconic. But I think style-wise, look, he was doing the Japanese strong style unforgivable. Like, he didn't care. He was unashamedly as stiff as they come, and you'll hear that from all the old guard, but you can feel that in the ring, and that means something. And I've had debates before on the impact of his career for people that, let's say, were WWE fans, maybe didn't watch WCW in the early 90s. Like, okay, he was a character during the Attitude Era, but that's it. No, this guy was on top of WCW during my favorite run in the early 90s, wrestling Flair, wrestling Sting. And like you mentioned, he wasn't just a one-and-done monster heel. He sustained. He was PWI Wrestler of the Year in 93. He had a very strong run, and I think the stuff he's done in Japan that, obviously, I didn't see when it happened. This was before, internet days. We didn't get to watch this stuff. Was arguably the strongest stuff on his resume. I mean, that match with Hansen, you go back 1990 and watch that when his eyeball came out of his socket, and he finished the match. I mean, these guys had some stiff, brutal wars.
I was in that camp of not knowing Vader before WWE, because that's really all I watched growing up until the NWO. And then I said, there's this WCW thing. Let me check it out. I also did, by the way, just a couple minutes ago, gloss over like Gorilla Monsoon, King Kong Bundy, guys like that. So there are other big men, obviously, who became incredibly popular. But Vader crossed over. He was on Boy Meets World, right?
Yeah. That's iconic for guys, around our age. I'm a little bit older, but I'll never forget him showing up on Boy Meets World. It's like, Hogan was on TV shows, but it wasn't like every wrestler was mainstream. This was right before the Attitude Era launched. So once the Attitude Era hit, everyone's everywhere. But this was at that point where wrestling was still kind of lame. And you got Vader on Boy Meets World. That's pretty fantastic.
And one of the best episodes, some say the best episode of Boy Meets World also. I mean, that... Let's not just make believe like he made a cameo. He was in an entire episode, and it was really cool. One of the funniest things that I always hear back is when he joined WWE, Vince didn't want him to be Vader. He wanted him to be the Mastodon. And that became his nickname, obviously, during WWE. They would call him that occasionally. But Vader fought to keep Vader, and thank God, because can you imagine if he was called the Mastodon when he was introduced?
Oh, man. An all-time great, deserved. A lot of people get in the WWE Hall of Fame these days where we say, there's no rules, so they shouldn't get in. When he does get in, it's very deserved. He should already be there. We tribute to the late, great Leon White.
Mr. Flair, let me refresh your memory, Mr. Flair. We're talking about Sting and his broken wrist. Ron Simmons and his broken shoulder. Joe Thurman and his broken back. Nikita Koloff, I ran him out of the wrestling business. Cactus Jack, where is Cactus Jack? His memory is gone. And now my latest victim, Sid Vicious. And you want to put your name on the line? You want to put your head on my wall? Bring it on, Mr. Flair.
of Fields is a Rockin'. Please do come a knockin'. In this corner with Brian Campbell returns with the Pro Wrestling Edition as we fill that syringe until it's runneth over with another dose of that performance-enhancing audio. The Brian Campbell, in fact, the voice that you hear just about ready to usher in yet another loaded show that you simply won't want to miss. 1 week after the handsome Greek Nick Kostos ran in to challenge the Silver King.
Take the L and admit you're wrong, because you sound ridiculous.
Oh, wow, and send him to a near audio cornerary.
How about you guys shut the F up and let me talk for a minute, okay?
Great moments in podcast history. We are back to tickle your eardrums with our reaction to Money in the Bank, NXT TakeOver Chicago. And look, a very entertaining week of WWE TV across the red and blue brands. We will also be updating you on the very latest from the Revolution. I'm talking about the 2018 G1 Climax. We got the pairings, the matches to watch, NJPW remaining on fire. And with me, as always, to chop it up is my tag team partner.
Say hello to the bad guy.
He's the master of the Silver Hedge and the man who loves to hate the Silver King, Adam Silverstein.
Hey now, if this is going to start, if this episode is going to start that way, BC, I have plenty to call you out on this week.
Oh, get out of here.
So be prepared.
Did you have to see a doctor after this past week? I mean, this guy, Silver King, was fired up. I was like, the blood pressure's got to be spiking after that.
Doctor said I need a bacchiotomy. No, blood pressure's good. But I'll tell you, this was a great week in professional wrestling. Start to finish, NJPW, WWE, NXT, 205 Live, you name it. It was good to great. And you know what? Good for them. Like, they got you back. You're back on the Raw.
I'm
You're back. Watching Raw. You're happy.
I'm back. I'll bet. Look, yeah. You know, I don't want to be a hater. And I think, you know, I tweeted something good about Raw this week, and I had people going, oh, finally, you're saying something nice about WWE. It's like, did I really become that? No, I'm just, I was sick and tired, and now they're back. They're taking it serious again. The road to SummerSlam, which starts at Money in the Bank, is typically always good. Last year, it was really good. This year, it has started off very, very promising, and Adam, all that wrestling that I consumed this weekend. You know how I caught that? I caught that on my Roku streaming player. You know what I'm talking about here, Silver King. The device plug into my TV unlock thousands of live streaming and on-demand channels, including that free CBS Sports app. I gotta give you one. Silver King, not always right. This one, once again, you're right. You're right on.
Silver King, always right, especially with this. This is just one of the paradigm examples of the ways that I am right when Brian is trying to watch WWE Network and NJPW and some of these other sports leagues through other devices, which we will not name on the show. I said, BC, the Roku, it's inexpensive, it's fantastic, and it's easy to use. You need to get one. Look, guys, I've been telling you this for weeks. It's awesome if you have subscriptions to any of those pro sports leagues, NFL, MLB, NBA. You know, right now, the World Cup's going on. You know, not to give a shout out to our competitors here, but there's a Fox Sports app. You can watch World Cup games on it. It's fantastic. They're all available on Roku players. You can stream them directly to your TV. Even if you don't have premium subscriptions, like I just mentioned, Fox, CBS, etc., Roku's an awesome way to catch up on your favorite local teams live with apps that you just register through many of your cable providers. And of course, Roku has access to tons of movies and TV shows, hundreds of thousands of them, depending which subscription and non-subscription services you use. So look, check them out, people. Roku streaming players start as low as $29.99 for the basic, or you can spring up to the higher-end players. They stream in 4K and HDR. Father's Day is come and gone, but there are plenty of other reasons to purchase a Roku, and they make awesome gifts at any time of the year. Visit Roku.com, R-O-K-U.com, to learn more and start streaming today.
That's what I'm talking about right there. We know that everybody seemed to really enjoy last week's episode. We've heard the reviews.
I heard you laugh. I heard you get off on it, brother.
Enjoyed having handsome Nick back, but he's unfortunately too handsome, too Greek, and too busy, and too passionate for us again this week. But Adam, we don't need him. We don't need that Greek guy. There's so much to talk about in so little time. And it starts, of course, as it always does, with the main event.
This is the main event.
It is easier when you cue yourself up for it, because then we don't have to worry about jumping on top with the sound effect.
Fourth wall. Here we go. Hit me with
that
play bump.
I told you, we're going deep. If you're calling me out to start the show, you're going to have a rough day, BC. This is how it's going to go. Let's start off with maybe the best thing that we saw all week, NXT TakeOver Chicago. I think we were both blown away by this, and it exceeded the expectations. I think it's fair to say that we put on it a week ago in our preview, just thinking the card's not that loaded. There's only so many matches. And there's a lot of guys that were not on the card, EC3, Adam Cole, guys like that, and women as well, obviously. So let's start off this way, BC. Controversial take from you. Was NXT TakeOver Chicago better than NXT TakeOver New Orleans?
In a word, yes. I think this is the greatest card in NXT history. And look, I do 3 podcasts. And on every single podcast, each fight one for CBS Sports, it's like everything that happens, we tend to quickly fill in the blanks and go, well, hey, guess what? That's the best thing I've seen in a year. That's the best thing that's happened this calendar year. That's the best thing of all time. I'm just saying, I love that late 2014, 2015 run of NXT, and I certainly have respect for the other eras that's possible. I just never caught the feels on a level this high that I caught for this card. And we'll get into the Chicago versus New Orleans debate in 1 second, but let me just put it like this. You said we put expectations on this card. We put almost some unrealistic expectations on this card, not from the, hey, are these 5 matchups on here large enough to, you know, give us that A-plus show, but this is coming right off of Dominion. This is coming right off of us marking out last week like,
oh, man, I'm fired up for this.
Like going nuts over Okada Omega 4 and everything coming off of NJPW, and we're damning WWE, and that sound is playing inside of me. Oh, wow. Woo! There was expectations where it was like, hey, NXT, you got to save WWE. Like, you have to raise yourself to an even higher level than we expect from you, or this wacko BC is going to talk about the revolution and who's winning the war and be like, well, critically, they just don't stand up. And Adam, NXT, and Trips, our guy, Paulie Levesque, you know that guy? I mean, we do know that guy, yeah. They friggin' brought it. So, yes, Chicago versus New Orleans in 1 second. But I got to just give them the straight-up mark-out moment for how damn good the timing was. Like, yes, WWE regular main roster came back with a pretty damn good Money in the Bank. We'll get to that in a second. But this NXT was through the roof, Mark Milk, everything.
The mega powers are about to explode in my pants right now.
I mean, it was absolutely amazing.
And yeah, I mean,
and
I mean, look,
it was better than New Orleans. Yes, and it was better than New Orleans.
No,
but
no.
Barely,
I mean you were talking to Samson apparently Saturday night, and you still are here Wednesday on in this corner as we're taping this show. But yes, fine. Before we get to the comparison, which you put out there, not me. So, you know, this is coming from BC. Before we get to that, there's no question that, like, yes, we did put expectations on the show, but they were lowered. We did not put NXT. We did not expect it to live up to or come close to NXT TakeOver New Orleans. We just didn't, because we said that's probably impossible based on who's on the card and how great that show was with 2, arguably 3 5-star matches legitimately on that, you know, New Orleans show. This was great. And I think it all, NXT does something really smart, and WWE tries to do it. They don't always succeed. They give you a hot match to start every single show, at least recently. And when they're able to succeed and hit on that, it changes not just your feel spot, but your expectation level for the rest. Because if this is how they're starting, how the hell are they going to finish this show? And I think it's fair to say that despite some reservations that we had on the card, particularly the tag team match and the heavyweight championship match, or the NXT championship match, I should say, despite those reservations, they exceeded the expectations and came through in a major way. And it goes
perfect,
to show
perfect
what Triple H is able to do.
And it was a perfect card. And we've given this take before, that how simple. So look, NXT works because everything's simple, basic, and awesome. But even the simplicity of a 5-match card, right? No undercard. Like, yeah, they film undercard matches, but no undercard on the presentation. 5 matches, and that allows each one to breathe. And even with those 5 matches, we're talking about run times of 16 minutes, 22 minutes, 9 minutes, yeah, 14 minutes. And then obviously they went very long, 35 minutes plus in the main event. But, you know, it's not like each match was 25 and a half hour. This is just, they're the perfect lengths. You get exactly what you want out of it. I've said it before last week with NJPW Dominion. I said, this is how I want my wrestling. This is how I want it to taste, look, smell, feel. everything. The same, Adam, can be said for NXT TakeOver Chicago too, because this is exactly what I want wrestling to be. And now NJPW at its very best and NXT at its very best are a little bit different, but they're close enough and so contrast to the WWE main product that it just, this is how I want it. Why can't it be like this? This is exactly what it needs to be. It's about the wrestling. They dim the damn lights in that arena. It's about the wrestling. It's not about t-shirts.
Right. No, it's the black mat, the clean ropes. You know, there's not seven colors going around, purple, red, orange, blue, you know, whatever. You're right. It's simple. It's they present the product to you like, hey, watch some wrestling along with some storylines. Not, hey, watch a soap opera along with some wrestling. And that's what WWE is, but that's what WWE has been for quite some time. So let's not act like we're just coming to that realization. I will say this about the NJPW and the NXT comparison. If you remove the two best wrestlers in the world, right? Which maybe is not fair, but Kenny Omega and Kaz Okada are like top tier where at this point after that Dominion match, really no one can touch them, right? That's how good and amazing they are.
Quick pause.
Well,
you're
right
about
this.
That, but it's not like the gap is so far. They have a second tier that we already know about of like five or six absolutely amazing wrestlers that are arguably better than anybody but Rollins and Styles.
I mean, maybe. That's kind of where I'm getting to, though. So if you take those two away, NJPW versus NXT, it's comparable in terms of how excited we get, how well the stories are told, match quality. The work rate for NJPW maybe is higher and better, but that's what they're going for. NXT is trying to do the mix, and I think they are succeeding, even in many areas that NJPW is not, because NJPW can tell the Okada Omega story, and they have the Bullet Club story, which really isn't being told on their TV. That's on a separate entity being the Elite, where that story is actually going down. NXT is telling five or six simultaneous storylines that they're paying off every 2 to 3 months at these events. I think NXT, and I've always said this, so this is not a change of heart or anything. I think NXT is the best wrestling promotion on the planet, top to bottom, when you compare and combine everything, accessibility of it, storylines, match quality, etc. I get more excited for NXT TakeOver as an entire card than I even did for Dominion, despite the fact that we had Okada Omega and Chris Jericho Naito, two matches I absolutely had to see. But I was way more juiced for TakeOver, knowing that those five matches were going to be great, and I didn't have to sit through 2.5-3 hours of crap. Which, let's be honest, a lot of those NJPW six-man tags, they're not bad, they're not poorly done, the wrestlers are good, but they're meaningless.
Right. I mean, I've made the argument before, but what those tags are is their version, I think, of Raw and SmackDown to further the storylines of the guys standing across from each other. But look, to your larger point, while I don't 100% agree with it, it's not a wrong point. You saying NXT is the best promotion in the world. I mean, right now, to me, NXT and NJPW are right next to each other. I think NJPW has a higher ceiling. They're always going to have a higher ceiling with guys on top. But man, I have nothing negative to say about NXT, especially when they deliver like this. And real quick, I've had a lot of people come at me on Twitter and just sort of say, well, that's great that you love NXT. That's great that you love NJPW and you're this indie hardcore dude and you log into this website that's hard to get into and you pay this money and blah, blah, blah. But none of those guys are going to be moving the merch and being as crossover popular as WWE, and WWE would never be able to make the kind of money they're at now and blah, 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 and get the Fox deal if they were presenting the NXT product. There's a little unwrap there. One, I don't necessarily, I get that theory. I get that, right? WWE has to be more about things like looking into the camera and selling merch and being about, you know, to get to this level of where they're this publicly traded and billionaires and all that. That's true. But I disagree on this point. This is how I want. This NXT TakeOver card is how I want my wrestling to be. If the main roster was this, maybe you wouldn't get the merch sales. Maybe you wouldn't get some of these glossy things. But don't you think, Adam, you would get the ratings, that it would come around because these stories are so damn well told? I mean, Ciampa Gargano might be like one of the best stories we've ever seen. The amount of details in this match alone and callbacks and feels. I mean, this is the kind of storytelling that hooked us. This is the kind of storytelling that hooked me with Hogan and Orndorff and then Hogan and Savage in the 80s. And I'm sure hooked you in the 90s with all that great stuff when the Attitude Era was heating up. I mean, it's a proven system.
Well, they told a story with Gargano Ciampa that they could have easily told in a similar manner with AJ Styles and Shinsuke Nakamura, who you can argue are better wrestlers, had more time and more TV time to tell the story. They refused to even start an angle before WrestleMania. And then once WrestleMania happened, they successfully turned Nakamura heel. And they did tell a story since then over the three or four matches that came after it. But they didn't really tell a story other than Shinsuke is a bad guy who low blows AJ. That was really the extent of that story. They didn't get into the history in New Japan, the fact that one of them had a victory over the other and, you know, maybe the series needed to get evened, or, you know, what was at stake, you know, not just professionally in terms of the title, but pride. And they didn't do any of that. So I think the answer for WWE is not be NXT. It's not be NJPW. It's infuse enough elements of exciting wrestling and storytelling that the entire 3-hour Raw or the entire 2-hour SmackDown does not feel like a slog of just storylines, merchandise sales, you know, blah, 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 thing after thing. If you give us two segments on a Raw that move towards storylines and you pay it off with an awesome match on the pay-per-view, then the rest of the matches can be B's and C's and no one's going to complain because you're still delivering to the segment of the fan base that wants that. Right now, they're not delivering to that segment of the fan base, despite Money in the Bank being good, which we'll talk about later.
That's fair. That's fair all the way around. And you Let's can argue NXT. That they've already made those changes, right? We have good women's matches today once in a while on the main roster because of what happened in NXT. There's a lot of things that have already changed it. I just, oh man, that's another.
Well, do we? I mean, here's the thing about it. Like, I want to talk about TakeOver, and we're getting off topic, but like, who are the two women's champions right now? They're Alexa Bliss and Carmella. Okay, Alexa Bliss doesn't, I mean, I'm saying this after she just took a table bump, but Alexa Bliss in matches doesn't take bumps. Okay,
she's a WWE-style women's wrestler.
They are divas-era, okay, blonde, attractive women who can talk, granted. They're very good, both very good on the mic. Alexa Bliss better, obviously. And those are your champions of both brands. While you have Becky Lynch, Charlotte, all these other people, including Ronda Rousey, Nia Jax had the title. She's also not a great worker, but she looks different at least. So these are your two champions right now. And are they really? Like,
no, you're right. Those are Vince promoted women.
How deep is the women's revolution? You know?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. A Vince-run promotion, they're going to be on top. A Trips-run promotion, it's going to be Becky and Sasha on either
Sasha,
brand.
You know,
I mean, no question about it. All right, let's unwrap this TakeOver thing.
Yes.
And I'll start there at the debate, because I think the debate between NXT and NJPW is so respectfully close that I was shocked that you're this upset that I said Chicago hit me right in the feel spot so hard that, yes, I think it's better than that TakeOver New Orleans card I was there live for. I think it's better than Brooklyn 1 and 2. Dallas in 2016, which was a great takeover. Yeah, I mean, name which one you loved, whichever one you loved better.
The reason it's a ridiculous take, and this is not your fault, but we were at TakeOver. I was watching it as your editor. Obviously, we're both on the show. You're our lead WWE and combat sports writer for CBSSports.com. I'm your editor on CBSSports.com. You had your head not in the laptop, basically. You had to, because you were doing work while you're watching the show, and you didn't go back to WWE Network and watch it again, which I did, and almost everyone in the world.
It. I've seen the ladder match.
Okay, but you didn't see the whole thing, and you didn't see the whole thing with Mauro Ranallo's call. So you're coming at it as a guy who has seen like 75% of the show in a halfway distracted way. And again, that's not your fault. It's literally your job to do that. But you can't tell me, after knowing what happened in both of those cards, and again, you just have to watch it again. Like, I really need you to do that. NXT TakeOver New Orleans is the best top to bottom card that WWE's had in so many years that I can't think
of the
right answer.
It's really close.
And Chicago was really good, but things like the NXT match with Lars Sullivan doesn't come close to Black Almas. It's not even close.
See, I disagree. I kind of predicted, and I'm not saying this to ride my prediction, I kind of predicted that Lars would push this match to being one of the sleepers of the card. I think he did. I loved the crap out of that match. That was really good.
I'm not saying it wasn't good, but you had Aleister Black, Andrade Cien Almas, in a classic NXT title match, not the best one, but a classic match. And you had Sullivan, who basically just had Black take bumps for him the entire match. And that's not bad. It was still booked well, but the match quality wasn't nearly as good. Gargano Ciampa 1 was better than Gargano Ciampa 2, if we're calling these 1 and 2.
So there's the debate, okay? There's both cards have two unbelievable standout, basically 5-star matches. And it comes down to which one you like better. So New Orleans, you're saying I have the ladder match and I have Gargano Ciampa 1. Chicago, you're saying I have part two and I have Dream versus Ricochet, and I prefer the two from Chicago better. I prefer the women's match from Chicago better. I prefer the tag team match slightly better, even though, of course, in New Orleans, the Undisputed Era had the Roderick Strong turn. That was great. Nothing wrong with that. But look, the debate's over. I don't think this is a debate. They're close enough. It's whichever one you liked. I like this one better. And in the amazing thing, if you want to ask me, which is on our rundown sheet, what's the biggest surprise of the card for me? You know what the biggest surprise is? That we lost more Ronaldo to Showtime Boxing for this card. And I actually like this one a little bit better. I'm not a big Vic Joseph guy. I don't even know if that's his actual name. Is that his name? I didn't even look it up.
I think so, yeah.
I think it's
Vic
Joseph.
Yeah.
I don't even like him. But again, while
Moro... Hold on. You don't not like him. You just don't feel for him.
No, just whatever. Yeah. Whereas Moro certainly can take a 4.5-star match and make it 5. Yes, 1,000,000%. But I think the matches were so great that it didn't even matter that Vic Joseph, who's standard, he's fine. He's replacement level. He's good.
Vic Joseph is the youngest guy and the newest guy, lead guy for them. And he's getting progressively better literally every single week I watch him. And that's to his credit. Good for him. But replacing Mauro Ranallo, you're not going to get the same level, you know, of broadcast quality. You're just not. But you're insane. Look, the Ricochet Dream match hit all of our feel spots. Milk of Magnesia pouring from the sky like Kurt Angle, you know, nailing two cartons together. It was a great match, but it's not a 5-star match, number one. And the NXT ladder match, North American title ladder match, which had insane amounts of talent, insane amounts of spots, and the same two dudes in it, was a 5-star match, whether you care about Meltzer's scale or you don't. I said it was a 5-star match immediately after, and I think we said it on the show. So that was a better match. The women, if you want to say that's negligible, okay, because a Shayna Baszler match, there's only really so much you're going to get. I did like the story that they told in this one, so I actually do lean towards the Nikki Cross one in Chicago. But the tag team match I also thought was better, so credit to that. But the three biggest matches on the card that we cared about were all better on New Orleans. The title match, the Gargano Ciampa,
and the ladder match. In your opinion, they're slightly better. And that's really what, like, you're telling me this is an insane take. You blew up at me Saturday night. This is a very, very small thing.
Because I feel like it's full recency bias from you. And
so let me
literally
like
never have watched TakeOver New Orleans in full.
Except for the main event. All right. But let me get to
sure.
And I'll watch it, and I'll completely mea culpa and take the...
You will.
As
you,
Nick
I mean,
would say,
be
I mean, believe me. I'm a man of my word. I come back. It's not like I'm afraid to come out here and...
Take the L and admit you're wrong.
I'm not afraid to do that, but here's the thing that you glossed over. Here's what I think you're wrong on, okay?
You're wrong. That's the difference. Go ahead.
Ricochet Dream. And I know you're not saying it wasn't spectacular, but what you said was it wasn't
great.
A 5-star match. I actually think it was, and I think it's the first 5-star match that technically watching it wasn't a 5-star match, but the other elements around it elevated it to 5 stars. And it's the first 5-star match I've ever given in my own scale, whatever that matters to anybody, where I believe that they can do increasingly better than what they did. And that shows you how incredible this match was, how incredible both these two performers are, and how this feud, if it goes somewhere, could be one we really look back on, or maybe it'll be a quick one. We don't know where they're going yet, but the storytelling, the attention to detail with, you know, Dream wearing Ricochet's old Prince Puma pants, Dream doing Hulk Hogan, which some people think is kind of pulling shade on their Tough Enough experience. You know, if not, it's just great as it is. If we just do it Hulk Hogan, the athleticism, the drama, the intensity, it maybe was just short of what we normally give a 5-star match, but the full product I marked out like a son of a bee. And I think that of all the people in WWE who have the potential to do Okada Omega things together and make legitimate 6.25-7-star Dave Meltzer matches, I'm not saying AJ or Rollins can't, and those are the guys I'm telling you right now are the two best in the company. But I think these two guys, Velveteen Dream and Ricochet, actually have that potential and actually have that potential together. I just saw a 5-star match that I thought was actually a little incomplete. What does that tell you? That tells you they could do 6 stars in my book. They can. They're incredible. Absolutely incredible, and I know you're not saying they're not incredible, but I actually put that up at a 5-star, and it just felt good to see them together because
there is no racism here in the World Wrestling Federation. We don't allow it, won't allow it under any circumstances.
And that's the bottom line, as he said. But it's great to see these two match together, knowing the past and the history, and know that, hey, maybe AJ and Rollins are the two best in WWE now. But Adam, if somebody said to you, in 5 years, Ricochet and Dream will be the two best wrestlers in WWE, you can't say that's crazy. You can't.
No, it's not at all. It's not all, but he's literally 22 years old. And there were so many, I don't want to say flubs or screw-ups, because there really weren't. But it was not fluid, parts of that match. It felt to me like something was missing, mostly from his end. And I'm not taking him down at all. I mean, listen, we marked out for him on Twitter. Anyone who followed me during that match, or Nick or you, knows I absolutely loved that match. But it wasn't that level of quality compared to literally the dream Aleister Black match we saw a couple months ago.
This is better, dude. This
I thought
better.
That was a better story. I thought it was a better match.
I
did.
Think you got caught up in the... Now, this wasn't your finishing move. This wasn't a Silver Hedge. But I think you got caught up in the Silver King ways. In just like, you know...
Silver King!
I think that sometimes when you see something you love, you're a little nervous on jumping in and saying, yes, I'm in love, and you cling to something that's wrong, and you did not like, and I think you're wrong, but I'll give you, unlike last week, I'll give you a chance to explain it. You were very upset after the match that Velveteen Dream did not win.
See,
when it,
you get it?
When it
you
makes it? A lot of sense that Ricochet would for many different reasons, but even more importantly than those reasons, the match was so good and they're so even, somebody has to win or lose, so it doesn't really matter who wins or loses. But even if you wanted to debate the semantics on who should, Ricochet as the newcomer should win. Dream should put him over because there's a lot of people that weren't watching Ricochet before this. But that was your reaction to the match, and I'm like, Silver King, you're killing yourself here. This was a five-star match.
This is the funny thing you do. You take me having a differing opinion or just stating something and then Nick or someone else arguing and then me replying, just saying, hey, no, this is why I disagree, as me being very, very upset about something. I wasn't very, very upset. I watched the match. I thought it was fantastic, okay? I try not to have recency bias when I watch these things and generally watch them a second time before we decide to grade things or do whatever we do. So I'm watching the match, and it's a great match. It's probably a 4.5, 4.7 five-star match, and that's not an insult to the match to say, hey, you're not a five-star match, but you were really close. When you guys fight again, you might be five stars. There's nothing wrong, A, with saying that. B, in terms of Velveteen Dream, what, you know, me thinking he should have won, yes, he absolutely should have won because Ricochet easily could have eaten the loss. It wouldn't have hurt him at all. He's totally over. Everyone knows how good he was. The way the match was booked at the end, there were definite situations where he could have gotten the pinfall and it would have made total sense. And they just are making this guy. Yes, he's 22. He should not be brought up to the main roster anytime soon. But they're making this guy look like he cannot win a big match. He hasn't won a match on TV since February.
He's a heel, though. And when it comes down to it, number one, it doesn't matter who won, again, because it was such a great match, and this is chapter one of their rivalry. But number two, if somebody's got to take the loss, the guy who's already over and is a heel should be the guy. He's a heel. Heels can lose all the time. You want to know why? Because in the basic theory of what pro wrestling is, to be a heel means you're flawed. There's something wrong. You're a little too arrogant. You're a little too violent and angry. There's something wrong with you that would make you a bad and negative person, that when you match two top guys together, somebody's got to win. That's why most feuds, the good guy ends up winning in the end. And it's
not
wrong.
You're right. In the end. And what would have been better served by having Velveteen Dream win in one of these scenarios, okay,
where maybe
Ricochet slips, he hits the Purple Rainmaker, whatever the case, you know what's better served? Brooklyn rematch.
We can still get that with this. Maybe this is just a different way to do it. So my point on this whole thing, you Silver Kinged yourself. You spent just enough time on being mad about Dream not winning.
I wasn't
that
mad.
You downgraded your grade and then overall downgraded the card to where you would actually utter that it's insane, that it's insanity for somebody to enjoy TakeOver New Orleans less than they enjoyed TakeOver Chicago.
I wasn't mad at the finish. I disagreed with the finish. And when confronted by Nick on Twitter saying, I'm insane and it's wrestling 101, okay, insulting my opinion, then I get mad at that. I wasn't mad at the finish of the match. I agree that either of them could have won, and it didn't necessarily matter. What I tweeted was, if I would have booked Velveteen Dream to win. That was the initial tweet, and Nick took issue with it.
Well,
that's where we rolled on from here.
You tweeted that it was a massive mistake by WWE.
Did I say massive? Even if I did, that's fine.
That's not fine. You just silver hedged and said either guy could win. And I remind you that you wrote massive mistake. You're upset. You wrote massive mistake.
I'm saying is you're right. No, what I'm saying is you're right that it doesn't matter necessarily in the grand scheme of things who would have won. I thought booking wise, it was a massive mistake. Whether I said that or not, I don't remember. But if I did, that's fine. I thought it was a massive mistake that they didn't give him the win in a situation he easily could have gotten it, with Ricochet not looking bad because of it.
You know what just happened? You know that part in Okada matches, right when he's setting up his finisher and the camera zooms away really fast on him? You just set up the Silverheads right there. The camera just zoomed right away from your face.
I mean, I just don't understand how not having a the way you're operating is that you have to feel one way about something, and you can't explain the shades of gray of why something could have worked better this way or why I didn't love it, but I really, 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 really liked it. Why is that a problem? Why does it have to be, oh my God, I loved it, it was a 5-star match, versus, hey, it was a 4.75 star match, I think they should have booked a different finish?
I just think I explained.
What's the problem?
Because it infiltrated your other opinions, but that's fine.
You're making that assumption.
Well, it did. I mean, well, you know, we can agree to disagree ultimately in the end.
We agree to disagree. We have a fight. We have an adult beverage. Whatever.
Right.
That's how men do. That's how men do. I mean, you know, you felt disrespected last week.
He disrespected me and my family through the media waves, you know.
But so, you know, we had it out.
I didn't feel disrespected last week. I was disrespected last
week.
Let's move on this card, though. Gargano Ciampa, right? So I did like the first one better. Just by match, we're talking match quality standards, but the callbacks in this match, the way it was booked at the end.
Yes.
I mean, this is the storytelling that we want in main WWE.
All right. You said there was something missing for you in Ricochet Dream, and I respect that. I certainly do. Theatrics
it doesn't
aside.
Sound like you do, but okay.
Theatrics aside, okay? It's your opinion. That's fine.
Sure.
There was something missing for me in Ciampa Gargano 1. It was great. It was what I rated essentially a 4.75, whatever. I think this was where they got it right. I think this was 5 stars. The grittiness, the callbacks. I think it was everything the last match was, but it was a little bit better. And then to have Ciampa win, which is not a major surprise. We predicted it in order for the feud to continue. But to have him win, I was all over it. And the referee getting knocked down, that whole thing. And again, maybe we got to have it out. Maybe we got to go mano a mano again. I thought it was fine. I thought the finish was fine. The referee got knocked out. He came back to life at the right time.
The finish.
5-star match.
The finish ruined a potential 5-star match. It did. You can't explain it away. Yes, the referee got knocked down.
You can.
Sure. And that happens in a lot of wrestling matches, right? The referee gets knocked down, takes a while to recover, misses a pinfall, misses a submission, whatever. If that's all that happened, fine. They had agents from the back come out and remove Gargano off Ciampa twice during submission holds, not ending the match. And then the referee comes in. And it's like, oh, yeah, I'll count the 1, 2, 3.
All right, I'll explain
it.
I'll give you the justification, okay?
Yeah, there is one. Go ahead.
It is. Number one is a 5-star match. But number two, the justification is this. The match, in the eyes of the agents, was over when the referee got knocked out and Ciampa was beaten to the point of psychoticness by Gargano, where they put him on a stretcher and they're like, look, enough. The match is over. So in the agent's mind, we got to get our guy, Ciampa, out of here, right? So he can live another day. Crazy man Gargano pulls him from the hospital bed. And look, we're staying in kayfabe here. Pulls him from the stretcher
kayfabe.
Bed, takes him into the ring, and starts trying to submit him. Yes, the agents are like, dude, that guy's dead. Stop it. Let's get out of here. But then what happened was Ciampa rallied, hit the DDT just as the referee came to. Look, number one, it's pro wrestling, okay? A referee got knocked down, and they didn't send another referee in. Why? Because it's pro wrestling. It's ridiculous, right? It's fake fighting. It's men in underwear. But even in that fake fighting world, the finish was fine. And because the finish was fine, it's a 5-star match. And because it's a 5-star match, it's a little bit better than New Orleans, which makes the overall Chicago card a little bit better than New Orleans. We can agree to disagree,
but we both agree
this is fantastic.
Wait, so you're saying that quote-unquote fine finish was better than the great finish to New Orleans, where Gargano has mercy on his friend but knows better not to allow that to happen, dodges the brace shot to the face, and then taps him out with a brace for the injured leg.
Yes, because he's
that that quote-unquote fine finish made that match okay enough to be 5 stars. But that fantastic finish wasn't good enough to make that match 5.
The overall match was better the second time. And Ciampa, let's not forget, you're caught up in the fact that you didn't like the finish and you're missing the good parts. Ciampa
was
beaten down, had his hands bound. The only thing he could do in that spot was a DDT, and he did it on exposed wood. It was a beautiful finish. I love where this feud is going. We can argue whether which car was better. Enough of that. Let's put that to bed. Is this feud going? Because I am so damn fired up. That was a great finish.
First of all, you have that same finish without the agents interfering, and it's great.
But that, see, you just pulled the Silver King. That's what you...
It's not. No, the agents interfered. I hated it. I said, here's how you could have fixed it. If you did this, it would have been good. They didn't do that. I'm giving that's not a hedge. That's not a Silver King. Okay, I'm simply saying here's how I would have fixed it. If you wanted that finish to be really good and you wanted that match to be a 5 stars, you don't have 6 agents try to take Gargano off Ciampa twice in the ring where it doesn't make any sense.
I just explained it to you. It does make sense. The guy was on a stretcher. Oh, he was ready to be pulled out.
It does make sense. The sense you tried to make of it is convoluted, BC. That's what it is.
I could spend all day making you a birthday cake, but if I got the wrong, if I got the wrong icing on there, I'm going to hear about it. No one tries to convince people to not love something they love that much than you. This was great. This
you would,
is
you
the
know
moment.
What? You would. If you made me a chocolate cake and you put strawberry icing on it, you're going to hear from me. You know why? Because it ruined the cake.
Oh, wow, this guy's unbelievable. But look, great card. I thought top to bottom. I love the ending of Nikki Cross, which you mentioned earlier when she smiles. So it's almost like she gets a victory in a loss because, yes, she lost. She couldn't get by Shayna's choke, but she's basically showing you, I love it. I'm crazy. I love it. And it shows you that she'll be back to fight another day. I love that finish. I absolutely love it. This card, man, it just really hit me in the feel spot. We can't linger on this anymore. We've got to get to transition to the next part of our main event, which is addressing the Money in the Bank card and addressing the fallout. But in between, I want to hit you up with this. We have great listeners, Adam. Great, great listeners. I don't know if we got a better listener these days than our good buddy Tristan Adelano on Twitter. At @Adelano_Tristan, give our guy a follow. You remember WrestleMania 34 in New Orleans when Tristan, I think he had 8th row seats in the Superdome, got 2 signs up for the ITC during the Triple H Rousey tag team match. Well, he was 4th row at NXT on Saturday. This guy's a crazy super fan. And he had 2 signs, including one that said #SilverHedge, which I would have popped big time for. He sent them to me in my DMs beforehand.
I didn't see that one.
Because the lighting was too bad, and our good buddy Tristan admits he didn't have the right marker on the sign. He had the wrong sign. Whatever. It didn't work out. He came back the next night, Money in the Bank, had seats right by the aisle, and got on Campbell, Silverstein, Silver King, and Costos in this corner. Shout out to our guy Tristan, a true, true OG, day one-ish, along with some of our other great friends like Omar Al-Rashid, your guy D. Mitty, Bob Backlund, Talkbacks. We got an all-star team of fans here. Anyway, our guy Tristan was at both shows. He's a definite super fan. I wanted to give him some shine and give him a little audio to hear from him what he loved about being that close.
Hey, Brian. Hey, Silver King. Wow, thanks for having me on. This is a really cool platform you guys are allowing me to have on your show. I'll try to keep this short and sweet. In what will undoubtedly go down as probably the 2 lowest rated minutes in ITC history. So let's get into it. I was at both TakeOver and Money in the Bank this weekend. Flew in from Portland. Was there in Chicago for about 4 days. TakeOver was great. Money in the Bank was great. Yeah, I think you guys mentioned on the show a lot about if WWE can live up to the TakeOver expectations, and very often they don't. And I think this weekend they did. I thought the TakeOver show was great. Obviously, the Chicago Street Fight match was awesome. Ricochet Dream. While I think it maybe left a little more to be desired, and maybe they can achieve that in the next match, was awesome. The crowd was hot for the tag match, a tag match that I feel like on the show you guys didn't give too much credit to. You weren't too excited about it, and I think that was probably a lot to do with not much investment in the performers and Lorcan and Burch. But man, that tag match was awesome. Maybe the best tag match so far this year in WWE. Obviously, I think the Golden Lovers Young Bucks match was way better, so you can't really say it's tag match of the year, but maybe a contender, yeah. And then as far as Money in the Bank goes, I would say that, I was really excited to actually see that Nakamura-Styles feud finally deliver. Both ladder matches were great, and I thought Ronda Rousey Nia Jax match was phenomenal. Rousey still, showing that she can go. Banks cashing in kind of added that little twist that protected, I feel like, all competitors, and most importantly Rousey, and then set up a new feud for her as well. So, yeah, thanks, guys. I want to keep it short and sweet, but I also want to say real quick, I listen to a lot of wrestling podcasts, and yours is the only one that's ever done something like this as far as, connecting with a fan, allowing them to come on, use your time to come on and just shout out a little and have a little fun. And so I wanted to say thank you guys for that. And yeah, keep going strong, guys.
That's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about. You know, that's our guy right there. Come on, anybody that's going to be that passionate for us. Was he the guy who also got that Milk of Martinique shine on Raw like a year ago?
Might have been. I don't remember. I think I would remember if it was him because I remembered him, having the other signs. And obviously, we met him also. We bumped into him at a show, which was pretty cool.
And he didn't sell our organs on the black market, so he's already
on It was a normal interaction. So Tristan's a good guy. Just real quick before we do move on to Money in the Bank, because he did mention it. And we did a little bit too, but we did undersell that match, the tag team match. It was really, really good and surprising at how good it was. And I'm glad he noticed that. And he's right. Yeah, I don't care about either of those guys. I just don't. There's no reason for us to. But that match was great. There's no denying.
They're making Lorcan look like a poor man's Cesaro. Like, he's really good, but they got to change the gimmick. Do something.
He's
right?
Way worse gimmick-wise than Cesaro. Like, he has zero gimmick. At least Cesaro
Exactly like he does the European uppercuts. It's like Ziggler doing the super kicks like Michaels. It's like, stop it. Tyler Breeze doing the super kicks.
One other thing before we move on to Money in the Bank. I know we're going long on a lot of, not irrelevant, but, different stuff. NXT, they announced that United Kingdom program. And now the new division. You have any feels on that?
No.
Okay, that's why it wasn't.
Not yet. I mean, maybe I'll give it a chance to win me over this UK special that's filming now. Apparently, I'll watch it. Hopefully it'll be good, I mean, I'm sure it'll be good. Moro's there, but it's not like I'm jumping out of my shoes for this.
Fair enough. All right, BC, number two here in the main event, Fallout from Money in the Bank. We have a lot of topics to discuss. Obviously, we're doing the pay-per-view recap and Raw and SmackDown all in one show. So let's just start off very simply. Did this pay-per-view, the results, and we'll get into them specifically, put the main roster of WWE back on track?
Yes, but I want to say barely. The high notes were there, and they did stack this card correctly, which is a big thing you're a stickler on, having your best matches finish, right? But because they did that, I was more than halfway through this card going, this is going to be a train wreck. I got my analysis ready for you for ITC on Wednesday. NXT is the best thing in the world. Hey, main roster, wake the heck up. Certainly with Raw, SmackDown, and MITB together, they got it back right. The last four matches, really finished on an uptick. Sometimes it is all about going home happy. You got to ask yourself, would you rather have a pay-per-view that's 75%, but man, it's pretty damn good on the take home. Or would you rather have it, inverted? Of course, you'd rather be going home happy. We went home pretty damn happy here. And I think the biggest story for me, tell me if you disagree, but it was Ronda Rousey. Like, without a doubt, it was Ronda Rousey. Storyline wise, it may have been Alexa Bliss. But real life take, Ronda Rousey hit a friggin' double grand slam.
How could I disagree with that? I mean, you know me. I'm not the type of guy to say, I told you so. But I told you so.
We're not the kind of guys to say, we told you so, but we told you so.
First of all, on Money in the Bank itself, look, it was an NJPW style built card, right? The first half of NJPW cards are crap. They're crap. Usually you get the Toriano's
not
part.
Not Wrestle Kingdom, but
But most of them are not entertaining. I mean, they're watchable, but they're just, who really cares? And then they hit you with the four main events, and you're like, whoa, this was built very similarly to that. So I don't fault them at all. They put Roman Reigns in like the fifth match, which I said last week I hoped they would. That's where he was. The Daniel Bryan match, he won. He got over. And we're going to talk about the result of that later. But they built the card properly. And ultimately, that's all you can really ask for when you have a card that has a lot of matches that were not good. But the match that was good that you just brought up, Ronda Rousey and Nia Jax. So, look, I've said it on Twitter. I said it on the show starting in February. A couple things. One, Ronda Rousey would be a natural and be amazing at this job. And two, that ultimately WWE had the opportunity to make her bigger than Brock Lesnar in terms of a merchandise person, someone drawing tickets and views and so on and so forth. You just saw an example of this on Sunday night and Monday night. And there was never any doubt in my mind, but there should now no longer be any doubt in your mind or anyone who watches WWE that Ronda Rousey is a bona fide superstar. She got a match out of Nia Jax that no one can get out of Nia Jax. And that's not insulting to Jax, but we've said on this program, she's not a great wrestler and she's still learning. And Ronda Rousey's way greener. This was her second ever televised match, her first one-on-one match. She made Nia Jax look like a superstar. Ronda sold better than maybe anyone in WWE, with the exception of like Lesnar.
Yes.
Okay. And that's very underrated that she's able to do that, because she treats it like it's real. And that's what a lot of WWE superstars don't do.
And she ate some stiff. Some of it was selling. Some of it was just absorbing. She ate some stiff moves out there.
It was incredible. And then moving forward to Monday night, and we're going to talk about everything that transpired. But moving forward to Monday night, they booked her the way I've been begging them to book her since she debuted in March.
So
have her be a badass, no joking around, beat the crap out of people, and take no prisoners. That's exactly what she did.
It's as if WWE took the criticism that we and anybody else smart had been giving the last 2 months and applied it all at the same time. And that criticism is what you said. Let her be who she is, a physical badass, but keep that dialogue short, abrasive, tough, however you want to say it. She was so good in that match on Sunday night. She elevated even my expectations. Even when she showed some of her greenness, she covers it up by being so intense in the ring, by working so quick, by being that strong. I mean, by showing you, I mean, she has a natural way of showing how tired she is, how in pain she is, in a way that feels real. Like it's a very, very understandable, easy to access. She doesn't feel like she's acting, and that's a true natural skill. And then Monday was almost twice as good because they finally got it right with her on the mic, and they went the next level, Adam. And of course, with her turning on Kurt Angle, hitting him with the briefcase as she beats down Alexa Bliss. Not only does this trigger an Alexa Bliss feud with her that suddenly I'm like, yes, we don't need Natalya. Yes, yes, this is exactly what I want. But they did the female version, Stone Cold Light, if you will, but they did it in a way that didn't feel like they were ripping off Stone Cold necessarily, because Ronda was almost heel-esque. And look, I know that's part of what made Austin unique at the time. He was a babyface that acted like a heel, but she's not doing it because she can. She's doing it because she's so mad that she's teasing that she might be psycho and that this might lead to a heel turn. And I tweeted this out. Psycho Ronda Rousey is the best Ronda Rousey. She was absolutely fantastic on Monday. Where can they go with this, Adam? Because this feels like, by the way, 30-day suspension, which has to be because she has other things going on outside.
Sure.
Brilliant. No fatigue. There's no fatigue when you got to wait 30 days and something is this hot. I'm all in.
A couple things. The only reason I don't love the 30-day suspension, at least as of today, is because I really wanted them to pay this off next week, where they do hear from Ronda Rousey 1 week after she flips out. WWE is going to address it, and they have a big thing, and then Kurt Angle suspends her and she attacks Kurt Angle again, or Stephanie McMahon has to show up and suspend her and they continue that storyline. So I really wanted them to use this heat into next week's show. But if there is a reason she specifically next week cannot be there, then yes, the 30-day suspension makes sense. I understand it, so on and so forth. I don't love the Bliss feud, although I love the storyline. So it's weird to kind of parse that, right? I like Bliss cashing in. I thought it was smart. I think as soon as she won, we were all very upset that she won. Okay, the Money in the Bank. Because let's be honest.
Upset's the wrong word. Disappointed.
Disappointed.
Because it was easy for her to win it. Too easy.
It was easy for her to win it. She's had the title her like 70% of her main roster tenure. She's not a good wrestler, while she is great on the mic. She's not good in the ring. And this now feud with Ronda Rousey, while storyline-wise I expect it to be very good, her being the chicken crap heel, Ronda being the badass face, perfect. The match I'm even more concerned about than Ronda Rousey, Nia Jax, in terms of quality and how it's going to pay off, because Bliss doesn't take bumps.
All right, here's the thing. Okay, Bliss is not a great worker, but I think she's a better worker than Nia and Carmella level. I think she can. And what I mean by that is when she's in there with somebody who can work, I think she's one that can elevate her game. When she was in there with Becky Lynch, she didn't stand out for being bad. She's somebody who can show you her limitations, but she never stands out, in my eyes at least, for being bad. I think she's always has a way of hiding what she's not good at and at least putting out a strong product.
She stood out because she was able to dislocate her arm in the disarmer, which you can bet your ass is what's going to happen with Ronda Rousey when she puts her in the armbar. That arm's going to get dislocated, and Rousey will win the title, I would assume, in that situation, unless it's, you know, a non-title match or who the hell knows how they're going to book it. But, BC, here's where you need to do the mea culpa. Who cares about the crappy line she was given and her inability to deliver jokes on the mic? Ronda Rousey has it in every freaking way.
There's no mea culpa needed.
You need to admit that.
No, okay. Here's what you're asking me to do. I said from the beginning when We got the feels leading into WrestleMania, and certainly after we saw what she did at WrestleMania, I never disagreed with you that she doesn't have it and that she can't be this thing. But I was telling you, when it's 4 weeks in a row of her not getting it done because of WWE, at some point we have to sort of put it back on Rousey and be like...
But it wasn't on her at
right,
all.
So it was their fault. But if they're going to throw her in the deep end every single week, eventually she has to swim or this isn't going to work out. So they were smart to take her out of the deep end in that regard this time around and not put her on the mic in those bad spots to crack jokes. But it doesn't mean she was good in that, and it doesn't mean WWE made the right choice putting her in that.
She wasn't good in that, but it wasn't her fault. And you say, like, they have to eventually swim. Roman Reigns isn't swimming. He's been putting crap for 3 years, 4 years, you know? And the only time Roman Reigns gets over is when he's able to be himself, just like he was in the program with John Cena. And just like for a couple moments on Monday night, he was able to sneak in some lines that either weren't written or he had the flexibility to kind of make jokes.
So it's WWE that did the mea culpa. They fixed the booking. They did it right. Take me off the stand, Silver King. It was them.
I refuse, because while I was there singing her praises nonstop, I never, ever switched off. I told you who was to blame. I told you how great she was. You got kind of pulled in the other direction. You started getting concerned that this may not work as well as I thought it would.
If they don't book her the right way, it's not going to work. That's the whole point. And the crowd's going to turn on her eventually. They changed the booking. They fixed it. They did the mea culpa. Wow, this guy's way off. This guy's hurt. This guy just wants to get... He just wants to just everybody to...
How about you guys shut the F up and let me talk for a minute?
Wow. All right, so they got that right.
I can't believe
I gave
you that
way,
sound drop. That was bad on my part. Go ahead.
We got to give WWE a high five when they do things right. Even though I didn't want Bliss to win the briefcase, the cash-in... To me, handled great. Handled fantastic. Right at the point where I'm like, Ronda's going to win this belt. They did the right move. They sustained the suspense. Now we get to see where they're going moving forward. Very well handled. And they started Raw with a attitude-ish feel, right? Like,
yes,
they started
yes.
Raw. And Raw, by the way, wasn't great, but it was really damn good. And yes, it did go in the wrong direction slowly over the rest of the show. But man, that first hour was hot fire. We'll get down to more of that in a second. But when you start it with a segment that good and it just continues across. I want to hit this quick because we don't have all the time in the world. Women's Money in the Bank match, people think I downgraded it, whatever. I thought it was good. Yes, I thought there were some good spots, and you got to give people credit. I mean, Sasha Banks took a heck of a back bump on that ladder from Ember Moon's Lion Salt. But yeah. I don't think this match was really good. I'm sure in the arena with that visceral experience, a lot of people coming at me, you downgraded that match. It's really good. I thought the timing was horrific on this match. Like
it was it, so what you have to do is you have to compare it to last year. It was way better than last year.
No. I take that. No, last year was pretty damn good. This one I thought was glaringly off.
Last year they had a man win the first ever Women's Money in the Bank. Whether
that's
they
a
expected
Vince finish,
they claim they expected that reaction and planned the rematch. I don't really believe they did. The finish to that was terrible. They had a callback finish to Becky Lynch being atop the ladder this year. I thought that was very well done. Talk about Sasha Banks, some of the things Charlotte did. The spear underneath the ladder into the other ladder was really cool. So, yes, it's clunky, and this is not at all an insult to the women or to women's wrestling, but they don't have the experience of ladder matches, and I don't know who the agents are, but if it wasn't men, potentially, or if it wasn't Tyson Kidd or guys who have really been in these, it's not going to get booked like the North American title match.
You tell
me And the women, just truthfully, their bodies maybe can't withstand some of the same maneuvers and things, you know, the dangerous spots that you can do with a ladder.
This guy trying to tell Sasha Banks to go make him a sandwich in the kitchen. This guy's killing right now.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm joking.
I'm saying they have the capability. I thought last year, except for the finish and the do-over, I thought the spots were just better. But look, it's whatever you prefer. I just think this one didn't live up to what it could be, because I have high expectations for these girls. I just think you had too many people at the briefcase purposely trying to forget how to unhook it. You know, it's different when people are crawling slowly up the ladder. We always see Dolph Ziggler at the top of the ladder way too quick in every ladder match, and then he's got to pretend he's got to crawl up. This was like people were actually on the briefcase and the announcers didn't even know what to say. So Corey Graves is like, they're off center. They can't get it down. It's like, no, they're right there. What's going on right now?
I like you're criticizing me for giving a fair take, and then you're calling them girls instead of women, but that's fine.
Let's
talk about the Money in the Bank match that really mattered, okay, and that someone still has the briefcase. The men's Money in the Bank, I shouldn't say really mattered, but that still exists. Like, there's still a briefcase out there. Men's Money in the Bank, Braun Strowman won, and I'm just going to give a quick take on this. I didn't necessarily enjoy the match. That's not to say it was bad. I thought they made a lot of personnel errors in the match, and Braun Strowman winning, to me, is nonsensical.
So in theory, yes, like Bliss winning, it's too safe. It's somebody that certainly doesn't need it at all, right? Like, he's a monster. Like, get him
last
ready for the title.
Last person that needed.
Last person that needed it. And certainly we wish guys who are not getting the right amount of love, like a Samoa Joe, like a Finn Balor, could get that, like The Miz, although he'll be in big things. That's a wrong point. But here's the only justification I can give it. It shows you that they're super committed to Braun and that he is heading straight to a title feud with no exit, no detour. Go directly to jail. Like, he's on his way there with a rocket ship behind him, and that's a good thing, because they've held him in the pause penalty box for too long, right? You know what I mean? And if you look back, I mean, he won the greatest Royal Rumble, which told you something. They allowed him a monster spot at WrestleMania to get over as a babyface with a little kid. Like, they are setting him up for giant things, and he should be in a spot to cash in on Lesnar. If they do Lesnar Reigns at SummerSlam, which we think they might, we don't know. If we think they might, then Braun threatening to cash in is a big deal. So in the end, I think it's going to work. But yes, nobody in their right mind would write down Braun Strowman getting the briefcase is a good thing. It brought down the match to a certain degree. This was not one of the better ladder matches. It was fair. It was fine. But that's it in the end.
I don't even know if the scenario you're painting with Reigns is okay. Like, I don't know if I'm okay with that. So we finally get the match again, and we're begging for them just to put the freaking title on Reigns and get Lesnar out of there, right? Which we've been hoping for since WrestleMania. We haven't seen the WWE title since the greatest Royal Rumble, and we're not going to until probably 3 weeks out from SummerSlam or 4 weeks out,
Universal,
right? WWE, I mean Universal, obviously. So what's going to happen, right? Either they have the match and Reigns finally wins, and then Strowman immediately cashes in on Reigns, which is like, okay. Like, I'm not excited. I'm already predicting that's going to happen. Or, like, before the match starts, Braun just walks down to the ring, makes it a triple threat, and Reigns never gets his win over Lesnar, so he gets completely buried without even the ability to win the title and be turn heel, potentially, or be poorly pushed, or have a feud with Braun, and you're giving Braun something that he doesn't need, because at any time, this guy should be able to go up to Kurt Angle and be like, Kurt, no one pins me, ever. I deserve a title shot. He doesn't need to cash in
a belt. On a few of those things.
Or a briefcase.
You're saying what we all want is for Roman to finally win the title. We don't really want that, though.
I'm not saying want that. I'm saying we just want the storyline to finally end. Do you want in 3 years?
It will finally end with this, I think, at least. And I think if you want Roman Reigns to go heel, it's probably a better chance that he would get screwed again to go there. Right? That would lead him to go heel.
That's a fair point.
So if it goes this way, what we don't want is Roman to superhero win over Brock. So this does prevent that. And I think the scenario for SummerSlam might just be like you said, he walks up to the ring, a Rollins WrestleMania 31-like scenario, although Rollins came in mid-match, but early enough where this is basically a triple threat because Braun makes it one because he has that power to do that. I would love a triple threat between these three at SummerSlam. Or maybe not love. I would like a triple threat.
I guess my concern is if we don't get a clean win Reigns over Lesnar, it's never going to not happen again. Like, in 3 years when Brock is... How old's Brock now?
40, 39, 40.
Okay, so when Brock's 43 and Vince wants, you know, a money match, then we get finally Reigns going over Brock for the title or whatever the case. Like, I want the feud between them to never happen again after SummerSlam.
I think
and
we're not on
the course.
If they
insert Braun, it's not going to be over. That's my,
I think
that's
we're not on the course you think we are. You think we're still on the course to get Reigns stubbornly to that point. I think Vince has changed the course, altered it. I don't think we're just headed to Roman Reigns Superman win, and he's going to keep delaying it to get it to the spot that he wants, because he's never going to get to that spot. He already lost the Shield cash-in, right? He brought back the Shield and then did nothing with it and injuries,
well,
and they blew it.
That's not his fault.
I know, but still, they poorly mishandled that. So I think they're changing course, and it might be a Reigns heel turn, or it just might be somebody else. It might be Seth Rollins against Braun Strowman, right? Like, I think they are changing course, and I want to see where it goes.
Let me ask you this. If they are changing course, is Braun Strowman the right guy to hit your wagon to? And I know he's over, but he's not anywhere near as over now as he was during the Reigns feud, because he was going against Reigns. He had Reigns to play off of, and the fans hated Reigns, so he got that extra pop. But Braun Strowman wins matches now and finishes Raw, multiple running power slams, and there's people cheering, but they're not giving him anywhere near the reaction he used to
get. Well, that's because it's like 7 weeks in a row of him just power slamming the same guys for no reason. And then after the match, he does it three more times. So yes, his pop isn't as big as it could be or should be, but it will be. And remember, Vince loves big guys. He's never met a big guy this agile, right? Like, this strong, this hulking. This is a Vince guy to the core. They're in good hands with him. He's fine, especially if you pair him against bumpers like Rollins, Balor, or Styles in the long run. We got Owens. Business. We got business to do. Owens, and they're telling a pretty decent story right now with that. So yeah. I'm all for that. So speaking of Reigns, speaking of Bobby Lashley and Lesnar, Reigns and Lashley added to this multi-men number one contenders match at Extreme Rules. Could be probably be the main event. We're not sure yet. July 15th, the next pay-per-view, for a shot at Lesnar, which we assume would be at SummerSlam. Reigns has to win this. And I'm a little fatigued on multi-man matches right now. I am. We've seen far too much.
What fatigues me more here is it's literally the exact same thing they did last year. They had like a 5-man match.
And that was a really good match at Extreme Rules. Underrated. It was like 4 3/4 stars.
It was fantastic. I think Samoa Joe won that one and then got the title match against Brock Lesnar at Great Balls of Fire, which they're not doing this year, unfortunately. This is the July pay-per-view instead.
You mean this?
Hey, it's better than Great Balls of Fire.
Touche.
Touche, indeed.
Touche. I'm not necessarily juiced for this. I mean, I did. You know what? I thought it was cool that they let Bobby Lashley act like a human being on Monday. That was nice.
Yeah, but he kind of flubbed his promo. I know it was written decent, but I think he's stained. He's stained from the sisters crap, from the Zayn crap, that I don't think he's confident as much anymore. I think it's broken.
I just don't know who's going to be in this match. Like, so Braun's not going to be in it. Let's assume he's going to do a program with Owens just to tide him over, right? So you have Roman Reigns, Lashley. Gender probably finds his way in. Balor, I guess, can get his own opportunity. Then you have a fifth spot.
It's too formulaic, though, because we just had Money in the Bank and a play-in to Money in the Bank. And I feel like we just had another scenario like that before. What was it? I don't know. I feel like this is all we do, is keep having these play-ins to get to this. And while I like that occasionally, it's creative, it makes Raw and SmackDown matches matter, you can't just keep recycling this every month.
They've been using it as a crutch recently, where it used to be, and they go through cycles. It's so weird. They used to be, there were no number one contender matches, and two people would just go out to the ring, and he'd be like, all right, it's a triple threat match for the title at the next pay-per-view, right? Like, that used to happen. Now, they have everyone fight for it in a 5-man gauntlet or an Extreme Rules match or an elimination match or whatever, but they don't even do tournaments anymore, except for the Cruiserweight one, right? So They're like, how many gauntlet matches have we had in the last 5 months? We've had 3, all for number one contenderships.
Hey,
all right, maybe do something different.
That's a good segue to SmackDown, the main event, because, by the way, I just crapped on multi-man matches, and you mentioned gauntlet matches. Holy crap, I loved SmackDown, the ending this week, this main event that lasted almost an hour. 5-man gauntlet match. Daniel Bryan, the star, the foundation, the backbone. But talk about a swerve. Adam, were you like me when it got down to Rusev and The Miz? That you already had your plane tickets cashed, you're like, wow, Miz and AJ? I didn't think we were going there right now, but damn, this is going to be fun. And
actually, to be honest, I knew Rusev was winning when that happened.
Oh, really?
Yeah, no, I didn't think they were going to put – Miz doesn't go over people clean like that.
I don't know. I was like, they don't reward guys who get organically over like Rusev is right now, but this time they didn't. Look, it might be a stay busy feud to get us to SummerSlam, and that's fine. Rusev deserves this spotlight. So does English and Lana if they're going to be with him. I popped massive for this, even though I popped 3 times as much for that Daniel Bryan Big E match to open, which was fantastic. Daniel Bryan and Joe, and then the Bludgeon Brothers, little curveball there. How do you feel that? How did you receive Bludgeons for really no reason taking out Bryan so Miz can slide in and get the spite-filled pin?
You mean like the gimmick I hate the most on WWE TV? I thought it was strange that, I mean, look, they're obviously going to try to explain it forward the next 2 weeks, but what kind of feud is Daniel Bryan going to have with the Bludgeon Brothers? Like, unless it's they were hired by Miz or convinced by Miz to interfere, you know, because then he capitalized immediately. They do a 6-man tag and they play that off into the Miz-Daniel Bryan match at SummerSlam that we're all hoping. Okay, but a Miz-Bludgeon Brothers alliance doesn't make sense. Daniel Bryan finding a tag team partner to go against them doesn't make sense. I mean, let's see where they go. I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt because their booking's been good. But it was kind of convoluted. Like, it was just like, oh, because he stared at them for a minute?
Well, it didn't seem to make sense, but I think they can make it make sense if Miz hired them as henchmen. And then I think slow playing a Miz-Bryan feud into SummerSlam is so brilliant. And even if they don't fully pay it off there and it goes to Mania, but it goes like on and off, like it's going to work. It's going to be perfect. When Miz came running out after Bludgeons, and we didn't know who was coming out next. I mean, you could have guessed Miz if you wanted to, but when he came out, it was like, yeah, yeah, I like this. I wouldn't have guessed and wanted the Bludgers to do that, but that's fine. I like where they're going. I like Rusev getting the shine. Nothing bad to say about that. To close this week on SmackDown and Raw in Money in the Bank, I popped for Sanity's debut. They did it right. I don't know why they waited, but they did it right. Beat down the Usos. They look great.
It was fine. I like that they didn't have the Usos' job, and they just attacked them, and now they'll have a match, and who knows what will happen there. So I did like that. I thought the debut was fine. Kevin Dunn, can you do more camera cuts? Like, there was like 103 minutes that they were actually on the screen. It was nauseating almost. I thought I was going to vomit everywhere. But outside of that, I thought they presented them well. It's a shame Nikki Cross isn't there. I know you're saying to close out here, but we got to talk, like, we have to talk about why this match even took place. Because AJ Styles beat Shinsuke Nakamura again in what I thought was the best match of the series. So we can't fully gloss over that. What did you think of that match? And do you agree with that statement?
Yeah, it was. It was in an odd way because I didn't like the stipulation. The last 10 minutes of that match were fantastic. It was electric, and I really specifically liked the finish with him leaning up against the table, absorbing the low blow from AJ. I, you know, like everyone else, thought Shinsuke should have won and was going to win, but they have other plans for him, and they sealed that in a way I was more than fine with. And I thought I really liked the grittiness shown by AJ, so I was completely fine with that.
That's how I felt about it. I thought they, in a feud that struggled from a storyline perspective, they closed it as well as they possibly could have given the stipulation of the match and the fact that most of the storyline was fueled by low blows. Okay. And it was an exciting finish and a really good match, the best match of their series. But that doesn't mean that I have not been left disappointed from the feud that we all wanted five-star match. And we never got that opportunity. It's not to say it'll never happen, but if they do it again in 2 years, they're both 2 years older.
This is typical Vince handling of things, right? He doesn't care. He doesn't have that in him anymore. The Vince 1990s storyteller is not here anymore. Guys, the billionaire Vince is here, the long-term business strategist, the guy who can take a character and maybe, in his mind, change the look of him a little bit and improve him. That guy's still around sometimes, but other Vince is gone. Hey, Trips, get the damn book, all right? This is not a novel idea. Can we get Trips on the book now?
And it's,
like, tomorrow?
And it's not unfair to say that Vince, probably the idea to turn him heel was probably Vince's, and it was a great one. And Nakamura as a heel is a home run.
Yes.
His backstage interviews, everything's great. All right, we've been going long today. Let's really quickly wrap up the main event here. NJPW G1 Climax, 28 blocks and matchups have been announced. Guys, this runs from basically July 14th through mid-August. Not going to go into, obviously, too much detail other than to say in the A block, primarily Tanahashi and Okada. Those are the two big names there. And the B block, in my opinion, is way more loaded. Kenny Omega, Tetsuya Naito, they fight on night two, which is huge. And Kota Ibushi, which means you're going to get an Omega Ibushi match guaranteed. What do you think?
Oh, yeah. You're going to see Kenny Omega beat the ever-living poop out of him.
I am so fired up for this. Look, this is an endurance test. We have people that listen to the show that got into NJPW, some of them just recently because of us. I will tell you this. The G1 is an absolute endurance test. I kind of shot the load 2 weeks in last year. I needed a break because it's almost every day, right? You get like a 4 day in a row thing where every morning at like 5 a.m. ish Eastern time, you're going to get a card. You don't have to watch the 6-man tags if you don't want to, although they preview essentially the next day's matches, but you get 4 matches a day from this tournament. And again, to remind you people that haven't watched the G1, every single person, every single match is trying to have a 5-star match. It's absolutely insane. It's intense. The B block, like last year, is better. In terms of the roster, I'm fairly happy with who they chose. I would have liked some surprises coming in from Out of Bounds. They didn't do that this year. They basically took off. Who did they take off from last year? Nugata, or what's the guy's name? I'm well prepared here. Anyway, they swapped out two guys and swapped in Hangman Page and... this is great moments in podcast history. Anyway, Hangman Page is in. Who's the other
guy? I think that's the only one.
No, they made two substitutions. Anyway, it wasn't...
Sure.
You still got some low guys. You still got Yoshihashis in there who have to take losses. That's fine. But A block, like you said, you got Ace. But don't forget, you also have Michael Elgin. You have Okada. You have Hangman. You have Minoru Suzuki. You have guys who can take losses like Evil and Bad Luck Fale, but B is where it's at. I mean, you even have like Juice Robinson and B and Ishii and my guy Toriano, the comedic star, and Kota Ibushi and Tama Tonga, who's fantastic, and Sonata and Zack Sabre and Naito. I mean, the B block is out of your mind. So if you want to do this half-assed, I'd almost say just watch the B block and take the A block days off, and we'll tell you which ones you're supposed to watch. But there are some potential firecrackers coming up. The last 3 days alone, Adam, of this tournament, okay? So put it on your calendars now. August 10th, we get in the A block, Ace Tanahashi against Okada. August 11th, the main event of the B block is Omega Ibushi, which is going to be all the damn feels. All of them, Adam. All of them. And I think whatever happens there is going to set the stage for what ends up happening at Wrestle Kingdom. And then the 12th, we get the A and B block finals. No, they face each other.
The final. It's the final. A versus B. Winner of A versus
winner of A versus winner of B. It's going to be absolutely fantastic. And you mentioned night two getting Omega Naito. Oh, man, that was a six-star match, you know, last year in the final. This is the third G1 for Kenny Omega. It's I almost don't have analysis. I just have stuttering and feel spots blowing up inside of me. Who is your pick to win it, Adam?
Oh, I wasn't actually expecting that. It's a really good question.
I'm going to cut you off. I'm going to Kota Ibushi. I'm going to Kota Ibushi here.
Okay, so I don't think they're giving the G1 to a guy who's not signed contractually for any period of time.
We don't know. Maybe he signed, you know, because this is a big deal with Kenny.
So, I mean, he's I'm not doing that. I love Ibushi, but I would say possibly Naito or coming out of the A block Okada. Either they do one of two things. Either Okada really goes on like a losing streak, but maybe loses two matches and there's something wrong with him and they play that storyline, or they're just like, boom, and they go full speed ahead with him winning his way back into Wrestle Kingdom and maybe taking the title off Kenny, you know, in a couple months, or in January, I shouldn't say a couple months. I think, but Naito being really over, having him beat Omega potentially in the B block, getting that opportunity and having that match at Wrestle Kingdom, which I thought was better than the Omega Okada G1 match last year, I think is huge. A couple other programming notes before we move on with the show. A couple news items as well.
Hold on. The other guy was supposed to play Jay White is the other addition who I don't like much into the A block.
Who cares?
G1. And I agree with you. I think the safe pick for them is Naito Omega, and that'd be a heck of a you know, Wrestle Kingdom main event if Naito wins the briefcase there. So keep going.
I literally didn't think Jay White deserved a second of thought on the show, but that's okay. So moving on, a couple programming notes real quick. WWE, it's been reported by PW Insider, and I think another outlet as well, has seemingly blocked a planned but not scheduled Ring of Honor show at Madison Square Garden. They were planning it for WrestleMania week in New York. So you know what? Hero or zero, BC?
I don't like it because it's like this. We're not in the territory days anymore, WWE. Like, why would they get to block another company from going into an arena that they don't even do pay-per-views in because they feel like it's an exorbitant price? They just do big-ticket house shows. Like, step off,
I'll tell you
WWE.
Why. I'll tell you why. It's their home. Vince McMahon protects his territory. Hero.
No.
I think it's great.
That is such a bad take. In 2018,
I'm just curious. When the hell did you turn so corporate?
Like, that's a really bad 2018 take to say. Like, Hero, protect your... There's no territories anymore.
Stop. Madison Square Garden is Vince McMahon and his family's building.
Okay, then you know what, Vince? Man up with all your billions and put a pay-per-view in there every year and show...
So because it doesn't make business...
Okay, so you should justify it because you're corporate now because you're going to justify it.
No. So he should do something that doesn't make any business sense from an expense standpoint. Just... For historical,
but it's their
reasons.
Home. But you're going to argue that it's their home, and then you're going to support.
They run shows there. They had AJ Styles win the title there.
They run house shows there. You know what? Run a Raw.
And they're
there.
Big, and they
you
sell
know what?
Out.
Vince, run Raw 25 from the damn garden.
He should have run Raw 25.
So that's all I'm going to say on that. But what it shows is that they're more into the idea of competition and stiff arming them than sometimes we want to give them credit. Sometimes we say, "Hey, they're making so much money, they got the Fox deal, blah blah blah." They don't care. Well, they do kind of care, and they're trying to stiff arm there. I think this is more of a way to say, "Okay, let's keep ROH out so that NJPW doesn't do some, you know, April show next year at the Garden."
Well,
that's like this new
look, if it was if ROH was going to try to sell tickets in Madison Square Garden at the price that you have to sell tickets, NJPW would have been all over that show. It was a direct competitor on WrestleMania weekend. There was no way Vince was letting that happen. And I, you know what? I say good for him. If this happened at the Allstate Arena, I'd be upset. I'd be like,
you know what this
man,
guarantees,
that's...
though? Even though you try to take the corporate Vince side, you know what this guarantees? That the revolution is real. I mean,
I'm all in. Are you all in, Brandy?
I am all in, Brandy. This means that they, no, they smell what the Rock's cooking. They
Oh, he's letting me. Listen, Vince is not unaware of what's going on with New Japan Pro Wrestling utilizing Ring of Honor for American shows. He's not stupid. Okay, he still knows what's happening.
I think,
but yeah, you're protecting
knocking,
your territory.
I think
there's no
in.
Problem.
I think the revolution's coming in. Vince can feel it.
Okay, one other announcement before we move on. WWE has booked the Super Showdown, and why the hell they didn't call it the Super Showdown Under, who knows, in Australia for the October 6th pay-per-view. You initially expressed to me when we were talking about this some concerns that it's adjacent to the Greatest Royal Rumble. I don't have those concerns, but go ahead and, you know, explain why.
Well, I'm fired up for our Australian listeners. We, for some reason, have a buttload of Australian listeners from D-Mitty to my guy Omar Al-Rashid. So shout out to those guys getting a show in Melbourne. I was a little bit surprised that Ronda Rousey, who's going to be on this card and tweeted about it, is willing to go back to the scene of the crime. That's where Holly Holm knocked her out. I got the poster behind my shoulder right now, UFC 193. I mean, you know, Rousey, let's not forget, for the past year, wouldn't allow people to talk about it for the past 2 years. I mean, wouldn't even allow it to be brought up in interviews. She's going to go back to the same damn stadium for this. So that aside, I'm only going to be excited if it's a real pay-per-view, not a forced network one, but a real one that falls in line and matters and not another glorified Greatest Royal Rumble. Look, I'm out on those. I'm out. They're house shows. I'm out.
So I don't care if they give us that, because we've been saying, hey, why don't you just put the MSG shows on the network? Why don't you just give us more network specials? Give us content to consume. As long as there's no, and there won't be, because Australia is a fine country with many great people and you know, fantastic scenery and laws and whatever. As long as it's not a propaganda piece, okay, telling us why there's these human rights violations that are going on, we should be ignoring because this country's trying to change. Again, not an issue for Australia. I'm going to be fine with it. That was the biggest objection I had to the Greatest Royal Rumble. It's not just that it was a glorified house show, but it was that on top of that, they tried to sell us on like Saudi Arabia being this amazing country with, you know, that doesn't, you know, violate the rights of women or Jewish people or so on and so forth. So, okay, that was my problem with that. This, I don't really have any concerns. If it's a house show, great. If they can work it into some pay-per-view storylines and do a title change, even better. I do think there's no issue with WWE putting a real pay-per-view once a year in another country. I don't care about the timing. They're going to be making enough money from the from ticket sales and all that to totally justify it. So
it's got to be a real card. Anyway, we got to get to our next segment, of course, which is Hero or Zero. But before I get to that, I want to talk to you about this. All of you out there know about CBS Sports HQ, our live 24/7 streaming network, giving you all the sports scores, highlights. You can see me on there breaking down fights across three different sports. But now you can also get the best highlights and biggest sports stories right in your inbox every morning with the CBS Sports HQ newsletter, packed with all the good stuff you need to see before you start your day. Hey, wake up, hit that cell phone alarm off, get it right in your inbox. How do you get it? Go to cbssports.com/HQ daily to subscribe. You're going to want to read this every morning. Hey, maybe you'll see your boy BC in there talking about some MMA, some boxing, maybe some greatest down under rumble coming your way soon. Make sure you get that. But Adam, now it's time to go to an absolutely speed round edition before the show becomes 3 hours of Hero or Zero.
All right, let's start it off. We teased it earlier. Dolph Ziggler defeated Seth Rollins on Raw, the first match of a hot first hour on Raw. And you wrote setting down a rematch for next week. Is that actually happening?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. I did not know that. Hero or Zero to WWE having this match and giving away the title change for free. Was it a smart decision?
Yeah, in the end, I think it was, because we have more gaps between pay-per-views right now. We know that. For the dual brandedness, they can't just run it back 2 weeks later. So sometimes on Raw, you want your matches to matter more often than sometimes you want them to. This match mattered. The IC challenge, when Ziggler came out, I popped massive, because this is one of those pairings, those matchups that could produce gold, especially if this becomes a feud. And the fact that we got the surprise title change right after the Rousey segment, that first hour was fan-friggin-tastic. It didn't make up for the last 2 months, 3 months of just being awful. No, but it slowly kind of made you want to forget about that. And the fact that they instantly billed the rest of the show that this rematch was coming next week. Look, it's must-see TV. I want to see this. I want to see what happens. Not just from a, can I see another foreign 0.25 star match on regular TV, but from a, is Rollins going to win it right back? Or is he headed to a higher, you know, main roster run in the future? A lot of things to come. This is a hero.
Interesting. I don't know how I missed that they already announced the rematch for next week, but that's on me. Hero, great placement in the show. Loved the title change. It was a nice surprise. The fans were excited about it, but totally shocked. And whenever you can get that type of response, it's a win. I love Dolph Ziggler getting an opportunity. We always talk about it, give him an opportunity. And this title reign, if it is somewhat long-term, even if it's a month, it feels different than the other ones because he's now in a spot where he's getting pushed and getting mic time to be a badass, not just a guy fans like who happens to have the title. So I really like that. It's a good opportunity for him, and we'll see where they go from there. That's a hero.
Absolutely. Number two, hero or zero, Adam, the Sasha Banks Bayley feud appears to be finally back on after another get back together breakup on Raw that led to a wild brawl in the catering area, by the way, that led to a parking lot scenario with Sasha Banks driving away. Hero or zero on the idea that this can still work, even though we've been teased so many times. Can this still have the same impact? Are you fired up? Hero or zero?
It's definite hero. It's almost like they tried to give us a long-term storyline, but just bungled it so much leading into WrestleMania and then the few months that followed and just dragged it out so long and weren't consistent enough in actually giving us a story that they ruined it in some way. That said, we have 2 months into SummerSlam. What I've been saying since WrestleMania was as long as they pay this off in Brooklyn with a singles match at SummerSlam, I'll be fine with it. And it looks like that's where we're headed. Absolute, total hero for me, even despite it being clunky on Monday night.
You said it, and I did pop for the brawl in the catering area, by the way. Big-time hero. Even though, of course, I grunted when they got back together to start Raw, but they did it right.
Oh, but you knew that breakup was coming, though.
No, I didn't. I tried not to think it through. I was like, what are we doing here? Are we going to forget that they've been fighting? What's really going on? But it was intense. Okay. Look, sometimes you just need intensity to fix bad situations. You know? That AJ, Shane McMahon feud started off really bad ahead of Mania a couple years ago. Got really intense, and suddenly I was back in. That's all you got.
You're right. If they can keep the intensity up in this feud, we're in for a treat at SummerSlam if they can go that far. Shinsuke Nakamura, BC number three here on Hero Zero, followed up his loss to AJ Styles at Money in the Bank, not by taking any time off, but by immediately teasing a feud with Jeff Hardy for the United States title. Jeff Hardy also cut a promo on Shinsuke Nakamura and had a very new look with new contacts, full face paint in black and white, reminiscent a little bit of Willow in TNA, even though I really almost never saw it. I just happened to watch that 24 special, which was fantastic. Let me throw that in there. Anyway, Hero Zero 2, this being the next feud and the way it looks like Jeff Hardy is progressing his character.
Double hero to both, because this is a perfect soft fall for Shinsuke coming off of this. We thought that feud was going to continue. So what do they have the potential to do? Put the U.S. title on him. It's really because they've watered down the meaning of a lot of their belts. It's really no different in my mind if Shinsuke's the U.S. champion and flaunting it for the next few months as opposed to being the WWE champion. Like, the WWE champion would have felt more, but because they have watered down their own belts, it's really the same thing. You accomplish the same thing. And I'll say this about Jeff Hardy, Willow, and TNA. It's a freaky-ass character that is one of the only things maybe that can give me nightmares as an adult watching wrestling. And I know it's not, like, overly scary, but it's just something really creepy about him when you come out with the umbrella and that mask and the face paint. Jeff Hardy's got a real weird side to him, and you might as well just let him do that. You're letting Matt Hardy do that. The broken character is exactly pulling out the core of who Matt Hardy is. That's why Matt Hardy broken is better than Matt Hardy 2.0, for my eyes, by a landslide. Let's let Jeff Hardy just be the weird dude that he actually is. Double hero.
I'm with you. Did you watch the 24 special?
Parts of it.
Okay, so it's very good. Got a lot. I didn't know the whole TNA thing. I just didn't, because I never watched it. I didn't know what happened. I didn't know about the match with Sting and how he came out and just basically got pinned because he was so drunk he couldn't do anything or hopped up on opiates or whatever the hell was going on with him. Anyway, so I got some insight into that old character that I didn't really know anything about. When he was giving his promo this week, I thought he was going to say, and now I'm woken. He led up to that, but he didn't say that. So I don't know if they're going Willow-esque or Brother Nero-esque, or just a totally different character that is Jeff Hardy being a little freaky. Either way, for him to develop outside of just normal Jeff Hardy, and for Shinsuke Nakamura to get this opportunity, total hero.
Adam, number four, hero or zero, the New Day took on the Elite, Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks, at the E3 2018 video game event last week in a Street Fighter V showdown. This was heavily promoted by WWE in the lead up across all of their social media channels and also aired on the Up Up Down Down show. I'm a little skeptical on this, so I'm going to ask it to you like this. It was very entertaining, but hero or zero, that this comes across by WWE as nothing more than shameless and desperate recruiting of Omega?
It's a good question. I'm going to say zero to that proposal on your part. First of all, I was thoroughly entertained by this. I was watching, like, people play video games. I know esports fans do this all the time. I don't. I don't care. But I was watching these two trash talk and do it, and I was transfixed. I watched it in the office, and I couldn't get work done because I watched them for, like, an hour play video games. It was awesome. Really fun, and it's still up on the Up Up Down Down YouTube channel, so be sure to watch it if you have not yet. On one hand, it was promoting for the means of recruiting them in the future to say, hey, look what the attention we're giving you has done for you. Look at all the tweets you're getting. Look how excited people are to hear that WWE is promoting you. They put their names on the website. They called him the IWGP Heavyweight Champion on the website, Kenny Omega. So there was a lot of promotion. I don't feel that it's shameless because, A, if given the opportunity, that's what you want to do if you want to recruit these guys. So there's no harm in that. And B, it brought more eyes to them. And ultimately, that's a net positive for the Bullet Club, who had New Day, and I'm sure New Day got permission from WWE, on being the Elite. So it's a net positive no matter what way you look at it. I don't think there's anything shameless or wrong with it. Hero.
It's a net positive if it leads to the breaking down of the barriers of all these Revolution guys, Cody, Bucks, Kenny. Their dream scenario is that wrestling returns to a territory-type setup, but nobody has an exclusive deal. And they could essentially come to WWE for a super fight, right? Like, do a WrestleMania feud and then go back and do Japan and do what they want. That's a very unrealistic scenario as long as Vince McMahon is still alive. But if this takes us closer to that, then you have to say that's a hero. Who wouldn't want in wrestling to see, you know, these dream matches? It's like boxing, which is always broken down by politics. You just want to see fighter A fight fighter B. Why can it not happen? Break the walls down, you know, Mr. Gorbachev. This would be great to do that. But if it's not, Adam, it feels really zero-ish to me because WWE never publicizes their competitors. And it comes off to me like there's, in one hand, they're stiff-arming Ring of Honor, which makes you think they're worried about competition. And on the other hand, they're so arrogant of where they are that they're sort of shamelessly saying, hey, Kenny Omega, we're going to flaunt you all over our airwaves. And I know they did that before, ahead of the 2017 Rumble, right? Right after Omega Okada won, when Omega's contract was up, they put out that video out there with Seth Rollins saying, you know, who would be your dream to run in on the Rumble this year? And he's like, well, Kenny Omega. And everybody's like, why are they letting that go out? Well, it was a subtle little sly. This was much more than subtle, Adam. This felt like when WWE was desperate enough to have ECW do an invasion, right? Back in the late 90s, that they're like, we need ratings to compete with WCW, so we're going to bring these people in. There was something desperate about it that was sort of like, we want you that bad, Kenny, that we're going to shamelessly promote you to get you to want to come over here, even though you are our biggest competition. Single-handedly, you and the Bucks are our biggest competition. Not NJPW, not Ring of Honor, but you guys, really.
Well, right? That's what I have been saying for a while, by the way. If the Bullet Club didn't exist, NJPW is not on WWE's radar.
Well, not only have you been saying it, but we also know, of course, that Kenny has been saying it, like, without a question.
Without the Elite, wrestling is boring and it sucks.
So I give it a little bit of a zero, but it's unprecedented to a certain
degree. I don't think it's fair to say it's shameless because this is not the NFL where you can't actively recruit players that are going to be free agents, right, on other rosters. This is wrestling. It's well within their rights to do that. They were promoting their own guys going up against them, and you can bet if New Day had won, they would have promoted the hell out of the WWE guys beating them. Now, they didn't win, and that was, in WWE's probably area, unfortunate, but it was still exciting. I thought it was entertaining, and WWE on social media doesn't take things as seriously as WWE does on TV and pay-per-views. They have a greater leeway.
I bet it was work to put them over. Anyway, we got to get out of here. Hit me up. Hit me hero or zero here.
All right, last one. WWE surprisingly came to terms on the release of Big Cass on Tuesday, just days after his Money in the Bank match against Daniel Bryan. Dave Meltzer reports that Vince McMahon basically brought him to TV on Tuesday, had a meeting with Big Cass, fired him. Pro Wrestling Sheet, I think, and PW Insider are reporting there's a myriad of reasons why, including drinking, causing some commotion on a bus, and a bunch of other things. Hero or zero to the chances, BC? Well, first of all, hero or zero on this decision?
Well, we don't... I mean, we're all going to say zero, because to see a guy right in his prime about to maybe find out how good he can be suddenly get fired randomly, it's a zero. Whether you like him or not, it's a zero.
Okay, so, and then second part of the question, to the chances that Cass and maybe even Enzo Amore, for that matter, if they reunite, which based on Twitter didn't look like they were going to, could become a key part of the Revolution, whether with Bullet Club or with Ring of Honor or somewhere.
This is the most surprise. This is the most interesting part of this news to me, of what happens next. Because it's a shocking news. It's shocking news to everybody. Timing felt weird. He just had a feud with Dan O'Brien. You would think, knowing Vince's love of big men and the fact that Big Cash is kind of like young Drew McIntyre light, just with way worse hair. Like, he's just kind of what he is. And if you look at Drew McIntyre's run, it's not inconceivable, right, that Cass could leave, get better, and come back. Who knows? But the whole idea that there's a Revolution, and we know he'll have a non-compete of some length, we don't know how long, but the idea of, what about him and Enzo? Can they play in this Revolution? Can they have an impact? I say yes, and that it's very interesting, because even though wrestling-wise, they don't seem to fit the mold of what Ring of Honor and NJPW do, which is being about high work rate and big spots. They're not that. But to actually compete, you're going to have to take a little bit of what WWE does really good to try to get people to come look at what you do, right? That's why Jericho and NJPW is really interesting, because he's bringing WWE style into NJPW, and it's fun. What if these guys reunited or just were there separately and they joined this Revolution? We saw them at All In, and we saw them show up in the Bullet Club with Big Cass's muscle, or Enzo just starting his own faction. That's how you get to that next level. That is how you leap forward. I don't know if it's going to happen, Adam. I don't know if these guys are going to have a good reputation in the business. I will say this. I ripped at Enzo big time on this show. I'm not ready to welcome him into my house, but listeners of the show said, hey, check out that podcast you just did. The name of the podcast was the Stone Horseman. I had never heard of it before. He was on there. It was hilarious, and it kind of put Enzo over as maybe being not that bad of a guy as we think, and maybe being,
the BC hedge. Look,
maybe
at
being
this.
A little bit of a worker. No, it's not a hedge. It's more of a mea culpa. I may have went too harsh on him because he disappointed me as a fan. He disappointed me in the way he handled himself. After listening to that interview, he's working. He's a wrestler. He's a con man. He's a worker. That's what they are. He's working. So I'm changing a little bit. I'm pulling the band. I pulled the Enzo band off the show from the soundboard. You won't hear from him today, but I pulled the Enzo band off, all right? He's not the worst.
Okay, you're okay with the consensual penis. I understand.
You know, people have said, by the way, hey, if you're going to ban Enzo, how are you playing Hogan all the time? It's a fair point. So
that's not a bad point. It is a little different, but not a bad point. First of all, Ring of Honor does not have work rate like NJPW, so that's not even – they could work Ring of Honor perfectly fine, okay? I don't care about Enzo. I told you when Big Cass came back, and this is the other part I'm calling you out on. You were all in on Big Cass. You believed they had something in Big Cass. They did not have anything in Big Cass. It was proven based on just everything that we saw from him without Enzo, with the exception of when they were first introduced into WWE, Enzo got concussed, and Big Cass had that run. We're like, whoa, this guy has something. Ever since then, he's had absolutely nothing, okay? So it's a zero to firing him, because I don't want to see anyone lose their job. I have a heart. I'm a human. I'm always going to say zero. In terms of whether the firing helps or hurts WWE, or if it was a good business decision, it's a hero on my end. He didn't have a good look. You talk about guys like Drew McIntyre and Jinder Mahal, who may not be, well, McIntyre is great in the ring, but Jinder Mahal is not good in the ring. He has a body type and a charisma and a character, okay? And you can say it took him a year to get there, and Drew McIntyre took going in the indies and stuff, but they eventually got there. Big Cass, I'm sorry, I'm not really one who should be saying this, looked sloppy, didn't have the body Vince wanted, was clearly not working out hard enough to get where Vince wanted him to go. In the ring was not good.
Look at this editorializing right now. Look at this.
No, could not. Well, that's what we're doing. Could not live up to having matches with Daniel Bryan, who should be able to get anyone over. If Rollins can get Jinder over, Bryan should be able to get him over. Couldn't do it. It was a total failure, the Big Cass character, in the reintroduction and being solo. So total hero on moving on from that person and that character, but zero for anyone losing their job. In terms of Revolution, irrelevant toward the Revolution, zero for that.
Size does matter, is what Big Cass was going to say, but it doesn't matter anymore. Vince gave up on a big guy. That's the biggest headline right now. Vince gave up. All right, that'll be hero or zero. Now we have a chat. I forgot to tease this off the top, but we have the great Chavo Guerrero Jr. to talk about his involvement in season 2 of GLOW coming up on Netflix and much, much more. Enjoy. such a pleasure to welcome in Lieutenant Loco himself, Chavo Guerrero Jr., to the CBS Sports In This Corner Wrestling podcast. Chavo, season two, Glow, June 29th, the Netflix comedy series. It's back. You got a big part of that behind the scenes, but thanks so much for joining us and chatting about it.
No, thanks for having me, man. It's Lieutenant Loco. I haven't heard that in a long time. That's cool.
Yeah, little old school shout out there. That won't be the first line of your wrestling history right there, but it was part of it, of course. Hey, I want to talk to you about this series, which, man, this first season really took a lot of people by, I don't want to say by surprise, but not just grabbed wrestling fans. It's grabbing the people in my neighborhood saying, hey, you're a wrestling fan. You watch this show Glow. It's fantastic. Congratulations on getting a season two. And tell me about you joining this project.
Yeah, man. So that's exactly what we wanted to do. You know what? We had Jenji Cohen and Liz Flahev and Carly Mensch, who were the executive producers. And, you know, when they brought me on this project, I basically talked to them and said, guys, I don't know if you really know wrestling, but you have a huge built-in audience ready to go. And they're yours to lose, basically. And so they were like, oh, you know, they're very perceptive. And they, you know, of course, they know, of course, that they're making a show for the masses, not just for wrestling fans, for anybody who watches it. But for me, I'm one of those guys like, well, shoot, I'm coming from the wrestling world. And I'm putting the Guerrero name on it. I got to do my best to have it, you know, true to wrestling and the wrestling period and wrestling fans also. So they, you know, the executive producers were so receptive to that, and they really understood that. And they were like, yeah, absolutely. So that's something that I'm really proud of. And you know, they were so great to be a part of too, you know.
Oh, absolutely. You're the wrestling coordinator and trainer. Tell me about, you know, you talked about you wanted to put the Guerrero stamp on it. You wanted to really have a certain feel in how the wrestling looks. So, you know, what was that really like in the beginning when the show was formed? Are you like almost holding camps, teaching people how to bump? What is this like?
So everything I do in the wrestling world or anything involved wrestling, I'm putting that Guerrero name on it. And not just Chavo, I'm talking the Guerrero family name on it. So we really have to, you know, pick and choose what we decide to actually, you know, put our name on, because it's not like I'm involved in, like, you know, I have total creative control. Of course not. That's, you know, I just have this little small part. So, you know, you got to be selective on that. So coming into this project, coming to the show, I had these actresses, you know, these, I think we started with 12 actresses at first, and two stunt girls who don't know wrestling at all. I mean, they've never even been in a ring before. The actresses, you know, were like, I'm like, well, are you guys athletes? Like, one's like, well, I did T-ball when I was in, you know, in second grade. And the other one's like, I did Shakespeare. And I'm like, okay, so that's cool. But so I taught them from the ground level. I mean, from as green in the business, we call it as green as you can get. I got them, which was great because there was no bad habits that I had to break.
True.
All except for Kia Stevens, who is a welfare queen on the show, who was an actual wrestler before and one of the best women's wrestlers in the world, or just best wrestlers period in the world. You know, besides that, everybody else, that this was their first introduction to wrestling ever, like had ever watched it. You know, some of the girls had, they started binge watching some wrestling when they got the part because they'd never seen it before, you know. So talking about getting young rookies, it really was, you know.
Oh, for sure. And the feel, I mean, it's a time period. It's a set in the 80s. The feel is there. But, you know, I think that's why the wrestling community has embraced it so much, because it doesn't cheapen on the wrestling. You know, like it's legit. You get that legit feel. So what has been the response that you've heard from your friends in the business after watching it?
What was really important to me was all the women that are wrestlers, you know, the divas or the knockouts or whatever you want to call them, the people that are the women in wrestling, the women wrestlers. That was really going to tell me what we did with this show. And when they saw it, I got nothing but great feedback from all the people, all the Bella twins and all of those girls that are wrestlers and are high profile wrestlers and have different shows on, you know, the E channel and stuff. They all love the show. They all call me always and going, God, Chavo, we love what you're doing. You're empowering the women and just making, you know, women's wrestling you know, really showing how strong these women are. It's great. I mean, I'm happy that they love it.
Yeah, and it is a good time in that sense, where right now in real professional wrestling, it is the, you know, whatever you want to call it, women's revolution, evolution. It's a great time for women's wrestling. This show coincides with that, but the show also points back to history in the 1980s of the GLOW promotion, which really was ahead of its time. So what's your history, either watching it as a fan of the 80s or any connection you had with the original?
So the original, so my uncle Mondo was the original trainer for the original GLOW girls in the 1980s.
Wow, did not know that. I remember him from the AWA days, yeah.
That's right. That's right. So he was the original trainer, and he had them, I think, in the first season, I think, that he was on there. So I remember him as when I was a kid, and him coming up and telling me, hey, you know, and talk to my dad, I got this new show, but it's an all-women show, and I'm not sure, should I train these girls, should I not? Just because of the stigma of the women at the time in wrestling, women were used kind of like as novelty acts or maybe like as valets type thing sometimes. But this was this is a cutting edge, like never been done before, an all-women's wrestling show, only women. So it never been done. So, you know, back then, it was the wrestling community was very jealous and very protective of their business and their sport. So my uncle Mondo wasn't sure. He's like, should I do this? Should I not do this? I remember him talking to my dad about it. My dad was like, yeah, absolutely, man, you got to do this. And then he talked to my grandfather Gory, his father, and my grandfather was like, hey man, go get it all, because you don't know what this could be, and if you don't train them, somebody some other hack out there will. So get on it. So he did, and that I remember going to set as a kid and checking it out, you know, and seeing all these larger than life women, and some were, you know, all different sizes. Some were pretty models, some were big old bruisers, you know, some were bikers. It was really cool, man. So that's I've been involved kind of with GLOW kind of for a long time, to be honest.
That's cool to hear. I didn't know that full circle there with the connection to the original. I like that a lot. And, you know, you've talked a lot about that Guerrero family, and it's not just you. It's not just your great late uncle Eddie, your father Chavo Classic. It's such a large imprint. You're a third generation superstar. What do you think really ultimately is that legacy of the Guerrero family that you're so proud of?
Well, you know, what was pointed out to me, and it was by Kia Stevens on the show, is that so my grandmother, when she went to she met my grandfather because she went to see her brother Russell, who was a wrestler at the time in Mexico City. So I'm actually third generation on both sides of my family.
Wow.
So it's kind of like I didn't really realize that until Kia brought it up to me. I was like, I guess you're right. I mean, it just threw out our blood, you know, bloodline, this business and every aspect of this business, from setting up rings to taking tickets to selling popcorns to being in the ring wrestling to promoting to kind of everything, you know. So for me to have that opportunity to use a little of that knowledge that's been passed down to me onto this show. And I mean, on this show, I was getting, you know, the scripts before, and I get to read the scripts, and I would highlight and give them my ideas, can't say this terminology or use this wrestling move, or I see what they wanted, and I would kind of like try to tailor a match to that, you know. So and as far as the wrestling part, I was involved in kind of all aspects of the show with wrestling, because it really all deals with wrestling.
For sure. You know, first season of GLOW, episode 7, live studio audience, it was a dedication to your late father, Chavo Classic, Chavo Guerrero Sr. How important was that to you?
You know what? So the episode 7 was very big. Like they were training in a backyard and stuff. And what happens a lot of times with me is that I will have me and the writers will have meetings, and they'll just start picking my brain, and I'll tell them different stories and different this. And next thing you know, I look at the script and I go, hey, wait a minute, that's my story, but you just rearranged it. They're like, yeah, you know. So this was kind of the way they did it in the backyard, like that. That's how we used to train. We used to, you know, my grandma's backyard, we had a wrestling ring back there, and it was kind of very similar to what set they actually picked, you know, what house in Hollywood that they actually found to do this in. So after my dad passed, and they were still doing the post-production, the editing of the show, they called me, the executive producer called me and said, hey, would you mind, you know, your family was such a big influence on the whole season, but really this episode, would you mind if we dedicated that to your father? And I was like, wow, like that just shows you the Glow family that we have behind the scenes, because they didn't have to do anything like that. They could have just, okay, well, great, no problem, which I've worked in other shows, and that's the way it works. You know, it's just business. For them to call me and do that, man, was so special. It really, really did mean a lot, you know. So it just makes me take some even more pride in this, in my business, in my work, and want to just produce even better for them, you know.
Oh, that's really cool. You know, there was some cool wrestling camos the first season. We had the wrestler who played Alex Riley in WWE on this show talking about that last year. I don't know, spoiler alert, what you can give us here, but are we going to see more of that? And maybe Chavo Jr. himself on the show? What are we going to see this year?
You will definitely have some surprises for sure, and I cannot confirm or deny whether I will be on the show or not, but there's some rumors out there for sure. But we have some other surprises and storyline surprises, character surprises. Without giving too much away, we always want to do, when you make a sequel, basically this is the second season, so this is the sequel. When you see like a movie sometimes, and you see the first movie and then you see the sequel, and sometimes the sequel is like, all right, well, you know, they tried. We wanted to come out and be, you know, almost like Terminator 2 and even outdo the first season. And I really think that we did that here. I mean, it's really just, we picked the wrestling up. We did more stuff in the ring. We did just the storylines really took off. And man, it's going to be season 3. Now we got to top that, you know?
So, yeah. You may have to get in a golf cart and dye your hair white. We may have to see Kerwin White come back for season 3.
Right,
you know?
Right.
Hey, speaking of that, I wanted to ask you about that character because it was a controversial one, yet, man, you really nailed it. This was a you know, there's a lot of almost political statements in that character in WWE for that short time you had him. What was that story and how that came to be?
You know, so what that was, I got off the plane from Japan and Vince McMahon looks at me and goes, hello, Kerwin. And I was like, okay, what is this about? And he's like, well, today you're going to denounce your Mexican heritage and you're become a white guy. I'm like, okay, so I got two things. I can either not do it and get fired, or I can say, all right, let's make, you know, lemonade out of lemons. And basically that's what I did. And I told him, I looked at Vince and I said, look, if we're going to do this, I want to go all the way with it. Okay, I'm a Hispanic guy playing a white guy on TV that's a I'm going to say racist, but a who likes the white better than everybody else. And that's kind of what we're playing. I go, look, I want to end up on a white sheet at the end of this thing. And he was like, oh, I love it. This is great. Oh, my God. Now, obviously, we couldn't do that today in today's climate, but he loved it back then. And I think that it just got a little too racy, I guess, maybe. You know, I was pushing the envelope. I was going to do it. Let's go all the way with it. And Vince, that's what Vince wants you to go. If you're going to give you something, he wants you to score a touchdown. Run.
Well, that's the thing. You're a heel. You got to offend people. So, this is pro wrestling.
Exactly. It's a character I was playing. And if you look at the first season of Glow, we took some of that stuff there and we put some of the two girls in the white sheets, and they were, and even on the, when behind the scenes, we had to hide it from them because Rebecca and Kimmy, who played those parts, were like, if we would, they would have found out, I don't know if they would have done it. So we had to hide it from a little bit. And then on the show, when we kind of, you know, you went to the storyline that it was really, you know, well-filled crew queen and jump chains idea. And then, okay, then it worked. But you know, it's a touchy subject. And, you know, in wrestling, especially in the 1980s, it was so stereotypical. You know, if we had a, you know, a Iran versus, you know, Iran-Contra issue, then we had an Iranian character or a Russian character or, you know, whatever, you know, a racial motivated storyline. We had all that in wrestling, and that's kind of how it was. And we kind of stayed true to that in Glow, you know.
That's really cool.
People like it. So,
and I was going to say, you know, I've talked to Sergeant Slaughter, and he said during the, you know, the Gulf War when he was playing the Iraq sympathist, he had to have security around him. And, you know, and I was wondering that same with the Kerwin White character. Yeah. Never get, you know, little issues outside the ring at all or anything.
You know what? He was getting death threats, to be honest, and that's the truth. With me and the Kerwin White thing, it was, I didn't get the death threats, but it's funny because you have the wrestling fans saying, oh, you know, wrestling's not real. But then all of a sudden they'd see me out and I have the blonde hair. They'd be like, how dare you, you know, you denounce your Mexican heritage. I'm like, wait a minute. Are we not real? Are we real? What is it? It's such a blurred line.
Exactly.
And we like it like that, you know, but people want to lose themselves in it. And I mean, I had people yelling at me, calling me racist and stuff. Can you imagine if I was playing a part in a movie to where you're playing like, you know, like an American History X or the Ed Norton and you're playing a Nazi type guy? You're playing a character in a show, in a movie, but people like all of a sudden believe it like it's real. So
yeah,
it's such a great
no
area,
question,
you know?
Shout out to Nick Nemeth, the caddy there, Dolph Ziggler, who was well. So to close here, I got to ask you, Chavo, about your great late uncle, Eddie Guerrero. What do you think Eddie would be doing in the business today if he were alive?
You know, Eddie was a genius, a wrestling genius. And I say that not because he's my uncle, but I really mean that. His feeling for matches and for just for what people wanted was outstanding. It really, really was. And sometimes he would get it wrong, but sometimes when he got it right, you couldn't get any righter. So he definitely would be involved in wrestling somehow. I mean, behind the scenes or writing or something. He'd have to be because he was just too good. And if he wouldn't be, it'd be a shame because that's really how good he actually was. And not knowing he was like that. And he wasn't really like that in life in general. It wasn't like, you know, he was just a genius all over the place. Because there's times that, you know, I remember him in school struggling with grades and stuff. But in wrestling, man, that guy was so good. He was so good. So he'd be involved somehow.
Absolutely.
Sure.
Love him. Love him so much. Love you, Chavo Guerrero Jr. Great talking with you, man. Everyone needs to check out season 2 of the Netflix comedy series GLOW, June 29th. For wrestling, for laughs, great drama. The comedy, the drama, it's got it all. I love it. Big fan of it. Chavo, thanks so much for joining us, man.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it, man. God bless you guys. Viva la raza.
There it is. Adam, I feel like I can go a half hour, 30, 60 minutes with that dude. He's been around the world. He's seen it all. Very good stuff. Love his take on the Guerrero family. Love his take on Kerwin White. Nobody talks about that character. It was ahead of its time.
In some ways. Also behind its time in other ways.
And by the way, I love his mention of what Eddie would be doing today. Eddie would be what today, like 51 or 52 years old? I feel like he would still be in the ring today.
He'd be in the ring. He'd be wrestling and being an agent maybe in Kane-esque role maybe, something like that.
But much more fantastic. That's got to be Eddie Guerrero. Hey, right in the field spot to close super quick, I say 205 Live every time there's a great main event. Watch the main event this week. Triple threat match. Buddy Murphy, Hideo Itami, Mustafa Ali. It did not disappoint. Buddy Murphy was involved in a Spanish fly off the announce table onto the floor. Holy crap. Fuel spot activated. Loved it.
That Spanish fly, to be better than the Styles Clash off the steps onto the floor, take something. And that Spanish fly was a better spot. That was the spot of the week in WWE. I thought that was amazing for me. Fuel spot, we didn't get to mention it. The B team pretending to be the Deleters of Worlds on the Titantron with Bo Dallas dressed up as his brother, Bray Wyatt, and it was weird just having the beard on his face. The eyes looked exactly the same, obviously because they're brothers, but they looked so similar. I absolutely love it. It's a great angle. It was hysterical. The part that they did that was supposed to be like fourth wall after the camera was supposed to cut away and they kept it on them. Hysterical. Total home run from the B team.
Hey, that's it. Follow us on social media at In This Corner CBS. Special thanks to Chavo Guerrero Jr.
Kano, say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Okay, now get out of here.
Well, that's
right
a little
now.
Rough, Randy.
No, yeah, but it is rough. Yeah, wrestling is a rough sport.
We out.